Welcome to the LinkyCast. This is the Giant Bomb Community's Guild Wars 2 podcast for the week of June 15th, not May. I fucked it up the first time through. But this week we're actually going to be doing a normal show. Well, kind of normal. We're going to be doing a beta impressions, which if you're not familiar with how we do things, every time there's a beta, we do an impressions cast. So it can go for any amount of time. I'm not going to limit it. It could go for the normal 1.5 hours. It could go longer. But joining me this week is Noobarama.
Yeah, I am.
Rawson.
Hi, how's it going?
Duran.
I already miss my necromancer.
And,
she's so
and,
pretty.
And now, usual guest. I'm happy to have him back. Shinboy630, how are you going?
I don't sound shitty this week.
Yay!
I have a new mic.
Woo! Alright, so just going around the table here, I just do the normal thing. What did you do this week? How are you going, Duran?
Sorry, I just
cancer this week?
I was doing well until that question.
Yeah.
Malaria.
But, so how's the family going? Everything's going right over there, Duran?
Yeah, actually, we're going to an amusement park tomorrow. That should be interesting.
Oh, what amusement park?
Worlds of Fun. It's a local one here in Missouri.
Wait, so how old is he?
He is not quite 2 years old.
Oh.
So
wait,
we're going for probably all
park?
Of about... Yeah, we're going to be there for probably all of about 2 hours.
Oh, why would you take him to an amusement park if he can't make memories yet?
Because his grandmother's paying for it, not me.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's a good point.
Wow. Better do it while for we sure. can.
Oh, you get the pictures. That's half the point of everything before right. 5 years old, right? Do you get pictures?
Yeah, pretty much.
But I mean, the kid can't necessarily enjoy an amusement park at below two.
Well, no, they actually have a whole, kids section. There's actually a section in there that's... it was called Camp Snoopy before, but now it's still Snoopy, but it's something else.
Like Camp
so, yeah, they have a whole kids section. So
nothing but teacup rides.
I used to work there, actually, whenever I was a teenager. So
wow.
And I haven't been back since, so this will be real interesting.
Well,
so
okay.
Do you get like some sort of
terrible
special pass?
Memories? Oh, hell no. But most people that live in the city have worked there at some point in their life.
Are you scared of like the possible inevitability of you getting there and there being like one person who still works there? And you just look at them and shake your head and wonder what they do with their lives? Could that happen? Do you think
as far as I know, a lot of the supervisors I think are actually still there, which is kind of sad.
Oh man, that's
there was one
awesome.
Guy. There was one guy. He was kind of the manager over. I worked in the food section, and he was kind of the manager over that whole area. And he was way into Worlds of Fun. I don't remember if I said it earlier, but Worlds of Fun is the place I'm going. He was way into it. He started there as what they call a red tag, which is basically somebody who is 14 or 15 years old. And you are only legally allowed to work at certain places, and there are very strict rules that you have to follow, things you can and can't do. But he started working there then and never left. And
so he's a career theme parkist.
Yeah. So, and last I heard, he actually like kind of took over more of like a director role at some point. And I think he's actually still
there.
Well,
at least he's moving up in the world. It's not like he's staying as the red tag guy for the
He's moving
of
up in the world. So fun.
in the amusement park world.
Hey man, so, but you need to pick a world to move up in. That's
do you think eventually? Do you think eventually he might be a manager at the local Six Flags?
Ooh,
that's
fancy.
Across
let's
the
ahead
state.
Of ourselves here.
So yeah, exactly. Like let's not talk crazy talk now. I mean, one step at a time. He's only in his like late 30s, early 40s by now. So
only in his late 30s, early 40s.
Jesus,
you're gonna turn on the TV. He's gonna be the new old guy for Six Flags.
So what have you played this week, Duran?
I've played a fair amount of Legend of Grimrock, actually.
That's a good game.
I have a Minotaur in your party.
Yeah, you do. He's a fatty.
Yeah. No, if anyone doesn't know, Duran's Twitch TV channel, so twitch.tv/Duran, he's running a nightly, or every couple of nights he goes, he's doing a Legend of Grimrock run, and for the first episode, I was in the chat, and I got him to make a character named after me, He's awesome. He's a minotaur. Or like your he real carries name. Skulls.
Let him die and have permanent.
He's up to what, 3 skulls now?
Yeah, 3 skulls.
Yeah, he finally isn't dying every single fight anymore. Like
I've actually got the secret highest resistance in the party. I didn't mention this. But I've got plus 50 fire, like plus 40 and lightning and cold.
Well, and also have the best sword in the game too.
Yeah, I have the best sword in the game and have the highest protection in the game. So I'm actually the secret tank. I don't do too much damage, but I outlast everyone else except for the rogue in the back row. Anyway. So, Legends of Grimrock, anything else?
Pretty much just that. I've been trying to get back into StarCraft 2, but it's hard because I'm also trying to race Switch as well.
Okay.
Which has been...
What's your preferred?
I've been playing Protoss, but after seeing the Heart of the Swarm stuff from MLG and seeing the new units they're giving to the Protoss, I'm not liking that they're kind of doing this heavy focus on Stargate tech now.
Okay.
It's just not really my playstyle, and I'm really, really liking the return of the old Hydras and some of those new units they're giving the Zergs. So
it seems a lot like recycling from the original StarCraft.
To some extent, yeah. Like definitely the Swarm Host seems like an evolution of the Lurker. And then, of course, you know, Hydra's going back to their old style of just being fast as hell now. The Viper is basically kind of like the new Defiler. But better.
Don't the Protoss basically have like an Arbiter and like a Corsair mix?
Kinda, yeah. It doesn't have any direct attacks.
This went way too deep.
Yeah, it is.
Way too fast.
Like, I own StarCraft. I don't know what any of this is.
That cloak isn't constant. It's actually something that costs energy and only lasts for like a minute.
Hey, so we're back. I believe we just had some technical difficulties there. We left off at a particularly boring part of the conversation about StarCraft, and I'm going to move quickly on from Durin.
StarCraft's not boring.
I can't believe a plane crashed into your house. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like Donnie Darko. It came through the ceiling, and then I went back in time, and then I went forward in time, and then I went back in time again. Kind of a different order than he did it, but...
The Protoss mothership was mad it was getting removed from the game, so it just stormed into your
No,
house.
It's actually still in. It's
oh, really? Not removed.
Yeah, it's...
Oh.
We'll get into this
after. I said we're going to move on. We're going to move on from the StarCraft.
Shows you how much I follow StarCraft.
But I'm like... I like StarCraft, and I've been wanting to get back into it too.
So, Rawson, how have you been going? What have you done? What have you done this week? How's your week been?
Well, a friend of mine and I, we decided to look into playing Steel Beasts.
Okay.
Which is, for those of you who don't know, it's a tank sim. It's a modern tank sim that unfortunately costs $100 to get. God. So we've been playing. We've been playing the demo for that. We got a 2-week demo, and I've been...
Wait, so what's special about it? Why does it cost $100?
Because it's a tank sim, then, and their primary client is military.
That sounds awesome.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. So it's for crazy people is what you're saying.
It's for crazy people, and it comes with a USB dongle for copy. Wait, so
is this now, the real
more
question
sim
here is
or less sim than the Warthog? Not Warthog. The, that
the
plane
the real
one.
Question is,
yeah, Warthog.
Does it support track
Warthog,
IR?
Right?
It does not support track IR, which is unfortunate because I have a track IR.
Oh my god.
Oh man. You are in deep.
I am
the
CEO
of Warthog game doesn't support track IR.
I'm rolling in deep. As far as its simulation, there's a lot more units, but...
Hey, man, you play Arma. Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck off. Anyway, there's a lot more playable units than DCS Warthog, obviously, because that's just one. But as far as detail is concerned, there's less, like, overall detail, but it's still got basically what you need. It's a tank, and it works like a tank.
So when do you guys think we're going to get to a point where Sims no longer can get away with having shitty graphics?
Well, the thing about MilSims is it's not the experience of the graphics. It's definitely more like the procedure and, you know.
Well, right, but there's other games that can be argued for as well. But at some point, they've had to evolutionize and actually try with graphics.
I would say that the DCS series has pretty good graphics overall. I mean, you can go ahead and look at... look at like the terrain at least, like, not zooming in all the way, obviously it's not meant to look good up close, but from like a flight altitude it looks good, and right. All the plane models, they look good, So that's like, what you need.
For Flight Simulator, I forgot which one. Not definitely not the newest one.
FSX?
Yeah, it might have been X. One guy, I don't know if you guys have heard of him, Dead End Thrills, he like just pretty much just takes screenshots, like super right. crazy screenshots.
They did it on the Okay.
Yeah, he was using a program that like streamed in satellite imagery of wherever you were flying for Flight Sim.
Oh, so yeah.
It looked awesome.
It's amazing.
I understand that the graphics are not the central focus of the experience. I totally get that. But I feel like at some point they're using that as a crutch to just not have to worry about focusing on it. Like, I would like to see Sim games try a little harder at actually not only, doing such an amazing job at simulating whatever it is they're simulating, but also having a believable environment in which you are.
Doesn't it all come down to like, I want to move on from this topic, but doesn't it all come down to budget in the end? Like, sim games,
a lot of it does.
Really,
I imagine.
The thing is also the scale of sim games is usually infinitely more larger compared to any other game in the market.
Plus, also you're talking about essentially eating up another bit of resources, and when you're making a simulation, yeah, you can add on, some nice, pretty looking normal maps on your tank inside the interior, but that's not what people are going to buy it for. They're not going to buy it for the pretty interior. They're going to buy it for the realistic ballistic simulation.
Yeah, I guess if we get to a point where they
realistic ballistic
simulation
is freaking easy. But I'm an aeronautical engineer as a background. You can do that on fucking a calculator.
Well, it's not so much the path of the thing as much as it's what happens when it hits the target.
Yeah. Oh, well, damage modeling can be difficult. It depends how you. Anyway, let's move on. We can really nerd out when it comes to this kind of stuff. We've got three engineers here, and Nidur at least knows something. But anyway, let's move on. Dude, that's been two in a row. That's been really obscure niche games. I don't like you guys.
Starcraft isn't obscure,
but it is niche. I'll call it niche. It's freaking PC strategy gamers is a niche audience nowadays.
No, it isn't.
I'm gonna put that down.
Yes,
gonna throw that down and drop the mic.
It's called Barcraft, not Bar of Duty. No one's going to a fucking bar to watch Halo get played professionally. But to be fair,
they used to go there to play Guitar Hero. So I mean,
hey,
Guitar Hero.
By the way, Cynic, the population of South Korea is over 40 million. That's not niche.
No, it's not.
Oh, God. All right. I take it. No, I don't take
it.
That's
weird.
Nubarama, what have you been doing?
Never, ever played
Starcraft. How have you been going?
I have been playing Arma 2.
Okay. So, as usual.
I've been playing that too. Do you play on the United Operations server by chance, Noob?
No, I just play with a couple of the Giant Bomb guys.
Okay. Well, sometime you should play on the United Ops server.
Is it Ace?
Yeah, it's Ace and Acre. Okay.
Is the problem
what
is
just,
my
what
computer
you, what are you saying?
Is it's ridiculously slow. So basically, I'm having trouble running the game at the lowest settings in most.
Oh
cases.
Dear! All right, and to give you an idea, Cynic, of what Acre is, you use a TeamSpeak server, and when you talk on the TeamSpeak server, it models that in Arma as if your player character is talking. So you have to be within ear distance. And then it also, in addition to that, it simulates radio communications.
Right. That sounds cool. That makes sense.
And Ace is like more advanced ballistics and stuff like
but
that.
But in the end, it's still a game for crazy people.
It's still...
You guys are... I'm just shaking my head. What?
I don't think I'm crazy.
I've also been playing Victoria 2. But
I've been playing Crusader Kings.
All right, so Shinboy, save me. What have you been doing?
Darksiders and Bastion.
Hey, there we go.
That's way more of a niche audience than goddamn.
So Noob, I was playing Crusader Kings 2 as the Duke of Northumberland.
Oh God, what's wrong with you, casual? Crusader Kings 2 is for casuals. You should be playing Hearts of Iron.
What are you up to in Darksiders, Shinboy?
Killing things. I don't know. Cloning Zelda.
Do you like it?
Oh my god, that game is so good.
I love Darksiders. I think it's really fun.
Is this your second time through, or is this your first time through?
First time through. I'm just playing through so I can play Darksiders 2.
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't know. We're hoping that Darksiders 2 is as good as 1, but yeah, 1 is a fantastic game.
Yeah, I'm like 4.5 hours in, so like
oh,
right
nice.
Right after the first like big dungeon. where you fight Tiamat or whatever the hell his name is.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's such a good game.
And then you have to go to that area, and they're like, you have to go through all those, there's like the five or six, like, portal things that you have to clear out.
Got it.
Right after that dungeon. That's
that,
the
that bit can drag. Can drag quite a bit.
I did like two or three of them, and I was just like, am I done with these?
I would say the good, like, larger portion of the middle of that game kind of drags.
Yeah. I think once you get the guns, it starts going uphill again, I think.
Oh, there's
That's
guns.
What I remember. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Ooh. Darkseid has got the horse yet. Cool. You get the mount as well, which is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Playing Skyward Sword after Darksiders is probably a bad move for me because I kind of was like, why didn't you just copy Darksiders, Nintendo?
Yeah, like you realize that like what you wanted this whole time was like a more mature Zelda game, and then once you got it, you realize that you don't want Zelda anymore.
Yeah, oh, that's what I heard.
That's not what my realization was. My realization was it doesn't take you 3.5 hours before shit actually happens in Darksiders.
Well, that's what I mean. Like you wanted this newer, fresher take on Zelda, and then we got that with Darksiders, and after getting that and going back and realizing that Nintendo really hasn't stepped up their game with their mechanics of Zelda games in a long time.
Not even mechanics, and I think Rosen's even coming down to like storytelling. Like Darksiders was bolts to the wall action, pretty much from the start.
The game's so dumb.
It didn't waste my fucking time. Like I think I timed it. It was like 2.5, maybe 3.5 hours until I actually got into a fucking dungeon in Zelda. Wow. And before that, it's all like, you know, hey, Link, press the A button to run. Congratulations, Link, you ran over towards me. Now hit the Z button to target.
Did you have to herd cattle again?
What?
Did you have to herd cattle again like you did in Twilight Princess?
You do some stupid stuff involving...
That was like the worst fucking thing in Twilight Princess was the like one of the first things they have
do. Do you guys think they'll ever actually give Link a voice actor? Like for me, from a storytelling point, like to draw the line in the sand for. Like I just can't take the fact that there's still for most of the voice acting
It's because they're going into like HD systems now. But I feel like this next Zelda game, they have to. Like, I really think they're going to in the Wii U one, whatever it ends up being.
It probably won't fly anymore to have just be...
Yeah, like at some point, like they've now reached the, you know, the rest of the world. They've hit the 21st century finally.
Maybe instead they'll just appropriate the sound effects from Animal Crossing into Zelda. Meet us halfway.
You know what? I'd take that.
Ico, I think it was, where they're speaking but you can't understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
I still that's like if they don't want Zelda to and Link to be, you know, humanized to that extent, they want to keep them a fantasy kind of group of people. Like, even that is better than their current solution.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Just make up a language.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved how they did that in those games.
Hang on, didn't they do that with, what's her name, Midna in Twilight Princess?
Yep.
Yeah, they did that.
She actually had speaking, like, she actually spoke. It was just in a different language.
Nice. Well, yeah, so, call me when that happens to Zelda, because at the moment I'm a Darksiders guy, and I've never really played anything past the first Zelda. And I played that on an airplane. I played it for 10 hours on an airplane between Australia and India.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
That's the only time I played Zelda. It was good. It's just not as good.
Link to the Past is pretty good.
Yeah, but Darksiders is what it's at
Zelda,
for me.
Zelda, please.
All right, let's talk about Guild Wars. So this week Oh yeah. Wait, have I gone through everyone? I've talked to everyone, right?
What have you been doing?
Oh, me. I've been playing motherfucking Phoenix Wright.
I don't care. Let's talk about Guild Wars.
So good. Phoenix Wright is amazing.
I object to that. Let's talk about Guild Wars.
I don't care.
So, yeah, this is the Impressions podcast. So what we're going to do is strap yourselves in. It's going to be a long day. We're just going to talk about what we did during the beta.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Our favorite moments, stuff like changes and if we noticed them. And in the end, we're probably going to maybe get to news and talk about what we think of how the game's progressing and when we think it might be coming out. But we'll see if we get there. At the moment, we'll just start where we start and see where we go from there. So who wants to start first? We're going to start with what did you guys do? I'm going to go around the table with this. Durin, what did you play
Mostly what I played was, I mostly what I did on Friday before and during the stream. I didn't get as much time in during the weekend as I wanted to, so it was pretty much almost all Worldly World.
Oh, right. And so you played your Necromancer for all of that as well?
Yeah, I started a couple of new characters, ran with you guys on I think both the new characters that I made, but didn't really get super far into them, so it was pretty much just a Necromancer for the most part on the weekend.
Okay, cool. And Rawson, what'd you play for the weekend? And
I'm not telling you where. For the most part, I played my Mesmer. I also experimented a little bit with the Necromancer.
Okay. And you generally did PvE or World vs. World?
I did mostly PvE and World vs. World. Yeah, that's basically it.
And Noob?
Well, I've just played PvE. Focused completely on PvE.
That was the Guardian, right?
Yes.
And just to round it out so we can actually get into the discussion, Shinboy, what'd you play and where?
I played my Thief, and like I did some World v. World during the stream with a whole bunch of people from Guild, but the rest of the time was care-bearing it up in PvE.
All right, so we'll get back to the start of the list. Durin, do you have anything to share with us? How'd you like World vs. World? Was this your first time really into World vs. World, or...?
Oh, no. I mean, remember, that's where we kind of started off, was we did that.
Yeah, but like, that was only like a 4-hour stint. This was actually a proper...
Oh, yeah, deep. Yeah. Yeah, this was like, once we'd all kind of learned how World vs. World worked and everything, and rolled together as a group, like this... I could easily see that pretty much being most of my experience in this game at release.
Oh, yeah, same. Because I don't know about you, but I spent...
We spent like all of Saturday, was it?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I'm trying to think of hours.
For some reason, I forgot about that. That was actually where most of my time was spent, Saturday in World of the World.
Like, last time, I think I spent 30 hours over the whole weekend just playing the game. This time, I think I spent like 20 to 25 hours just in World vs. World.
Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It was nuts. We played like 18 hours of World vs. World. The Australian guys, so me and Tarkin, who isn't here today. On Saturday, our Saturday night, Sunday morning till like 3 a.m. or something. Yeah,
and you called me crazy for playing a $100 tank sim.
Well, because see, for the people who watched the live stream and saw that we basically had nothing to do in World vs. World because we owned everything. Not too long after that, like later that evening, they reset World vs. World.
Yeah,
and apparently everybody on our server left and didn't come back because suddenly we were just fighting to hold as much as we could to keep ourselves above the.
Well, it was twofold. Server. Like, I want to go into like my stories towards the end, but just to give a preview, it was like us versus Darkhaven in a third, because we're Yaxbin, we're in the Yaxbin server. So Darkhaven was the second matchup. The first time through, which is what you saw in the live stream, it was us versus two random small servers, and it was really imbalanced because like they just didn't have the participation levels that we did. So what Anet did was they reset the servers around 8 o'clock of my time, so it'd be what, around 2 a.m. 3 a.m. the US time, something like that. They reset it such that the matchup was a bit more balanced. So we actually had a really tough fight. Like Darkhaven were very involved and very, very into it. I actually really respect them, even though we came second to them. I think they actually put up a really good fight for the majority of it. But we'll get to there later. I think we'll start with the jumping puzzle, like because we touched on it during the live stream, but we kind of glossed over it. I mean, and you were playing at the time, so you couldn't really give us a perspective. So I want you to tell me a tale. Tell me the tale of what we did and how you discovered and what you did in the jumping puzzle in the World vs. World.
Okay, well, I should probably preface this by saying that when we did the jumping puzzle, it was during kind of our testing before the live event on Friday, so... Because of that, because of the time that we did that, we owned pretty much all of World vs. World. So when we did that dungeon, which is the jumping puzzle that Cynic's referring to, we were pretty much uncontested. There weren't anybody else. There wasn't anybody else in there from the other servers. So we didn't have to worry about that. However,
just to give us, like,
that didn't
context.
Mean that people didn't kill people.
Yeah. just before we get there, to give overall context, and I touched on it last time, but I'll just go into it again for those who weren't here. So there's a new dungeon in World vs. World. It's in the central map, so the one that's contested by all three sides, and it's linked to the three major keeps in that area. So there's an entrance in all three keeps to get to this underground area. What it is essentially, you walk in, and it's a gigantic cavern. Like, if you've watched movies where a person walks into, like, through a cave and suddenly comes out into, like, a magical island filled with wondrous monsters, like, if you see movies like that, then it's similar to that in the size and scope of the area when you finally walk into this world. Because it seriously seems like an entire map is...
It's like the Goonies.
it's like what's described, minus the monsters.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's
so the Cave of people, Wonders.
People are the more...
Yeah, I was going to say, but you didn't need them because there were people.
Yeah, so and so you get there via World vs. World, but it is a dungeon. It's not instanced, so we can confirm you can get down there, and it's always on.
Yeah, it's not instanced, and I guess my misunderstanding of what instanced meant was why I was confused about it before. Yeah. It is behind an instance portal.
Yeah, it's behind a portal. It's
but there is only
map.
One instance of it.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I was confused about that. So that's how it ends up working. Like, so when people said it wasn't instanced, I was like, well, how is that going to work then with resetting? And like, I didn't understand the logistics of that. But after going in myself, it's like, okay, it is behind an instance loading screen, but there is a single instance of it. So everybody that goes through that loading screen all end up in the same area.
Yeah. So start from what you felt when you first walk into the area and how we found it. I think it took us a while to find it. So start from
basically noticed on the map that every one of the keeps had like a I think it was a purple circle on the keep, and we kind of guessed this must be where it's at. And I just kind of on a whim when I was heading back after I had died to defending a keep, I was like, I'm nearby one. I'll go down there and check it out. So I go in there and hit the load screen. Come through it, and again, like, there's just this massive, massive cavern that just, like, in front of me, there was this, like, purple crystal that was kind of on a pedestal, and then further back behind that, there was this much larger, like, back behind and way up, there was this much larger purple crystal.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, intrigue, I immediately run up there and just hit the purple crystal, and it shines a light in a direction, and I, again, like, just, you know, inferring that clearly they want me to go that direction. And so that began the jumping puzzle.
Like, we kind of stood there for a while.
Yeah, we did kind of stand there for a while. Like, we weren't really sure. I at one point had, I don't recall who it was that was with me at the time.
It was Tarkin.
Okay. Had them like stand there and hit the button because I thought maybe it was like on a timer and would raise something.
Because when you hear dungeon, like when they said it was a dungeon, I expected like a classical dungeon where like you go down steps and there's like a dark, dingy.
Right. And especially when they describe it as like a dungeon with like traps and things like that.
Yeah, I thought it was like Legend of Grimrock. I think it'd be like essentially a Guild Wars equivalent of Legend of Grimrock. And you go down there but instead it's like a completely inversion of that.
Yeah, instead it's more of like a Guild Wars version of Super Meat Boy.
We started
off the jumping puzzle, and we realized after going through kind of the first hallway,
does it go 2D?
I wish that would have made it easier.
Does it show all the replays when you finally make it?
Oh, again, I wish that would have been amazing.
No, just crash the server. It would crash the whole server.
That first hallway, when you get to the very end of it, you realize it's just a dead end. But partway through the hallway, there was a hole in the wall that you could go through.
Yeah, so like we're standing there at the light beam, right? And then we're looking around and doing, okay, where's the steps? Like, where do we start the dungeon thing? How do we get this going? And we're looking around and we can't see anything. Like, it's literally just like ruins all around us. Like, you're walking over, there's like a kind of an outcrop, right? And at the edge of that's the crystal, and it's pointing a light in one direction. So we're looking around going, okay, so is there a button we have to press to like lower the stairs or something to start this dungeon? But then we look around and we see that's like hallway, like moving to the left. And that's what he means. Like, we go down the hallway and it ends in a dead end. Like, it ends like this little bridge that breaks off. Yeah, it's a drop off to like nothing. And we're like, okay, where does it start? Like, is this broken? Like, is this like a dynamic event that has to like trigger something? And then, we see that a hole in the wall. And during just like, I'll let you go on. If you see a hole in the wall, go.
Yeah, so we see the hole in the wall, and so we decide, okay, this seems to lead to the path that looks like it would lead to where that light is shining. So let's go this way. So we jump across that, do a couple more fairly easy jumps. And that's kind of the thing about this jumping puzzle slash dungeon place is it starts off pretty easy, and by the end, I would love to know. I'd love to see the numbers of how many people actually made it to the end of this thing.
Over the course of the weekend. I hope they release those. Yeah, definitely.
Because I don't imagine it was a lot, especially once World War World Combat became more heated. But so we make it across and then like that's basically kind of the end of the easy jumps. Because like from there,
pretty much after about five jumps.
Yeah, so from there, you kind of go around a corner, and you're walking along a real thin ledge. And eventually, if I recall correctly, unless I'm missing a couple things, there were some other things in the middle, but mostly it basically leads you to this well. And you're at kind of what looks like the mid-ish point.
Maybe, and this whole time, we're like, where's the dungeon? Like, is this starting? Like, are we even going the right way? It feels as if you are breaking the game by exploiting edges, like, and ledges and stuff they've left in the environment. It didn't feel
a
dungeon.
It wasn't until we hit the well that you really felt like, okay, this is clearly where they intended me to go, because they had like wooden pathways that you would have to jump to and that would lead you up the well.
Exactly. It wasn't like a top of well looking down. It was like you walk in and then you look up and it turns out, hey, I'm actually in a well.
But you're also not at the bottom either, because you could fall out. Like I said, you're kind of somewhere in the bottom third of the well. And so basically you're just taking this jumping spiral all the way up the well till you get to the very top.
Yeah.
And once you get to the top of that, like you kind of already feel like you are this amazing player, because you just conquered the well. And then you realize that is the first of a great many hardships that you're going to come across throughout the course of this dungeon.
Yeah, it's like literally the easy stuff at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, the well was nothing.
Oh, I have a question about all of this.
Go ahead.
This is like one instance of this area, so in theory you could like have to do all this with other people, like
PvPing. Yes, exactly. Yes. Again, we own the whole area. So this is like optimal
the only
experience.
Reason, yeah, the only reason we got it as far as we did is because nobody else was in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So once like the game gets going, I don't know if anyone's going to be reaching the end of this.
No.
So
I don't even know how some of us reached the end of it. Let alone. Yeah.
So basically, like after you get up through the well, you make a few more jumps, and I'm kind of skipping through things because a lot of it is kind of just blurs together. But there's one point that got to be kind of the harder jumps where you kind of went down this pathway, and you jumped onto this square pillar. And you jump from that to a second square pillar, and then you jump from that to
So when you get up the well, right? So just to rewind a little, like this entire time we were doing pretty well, so we didn't realize that at any point if we'd failed a specific jump, you essentially get reset all the way back to the fucking start. Like up the well, like if you jump up the well, it's like a big circular jumping puzzle kind of get up. It's as if you're tracking like those stairs and ancient castles up like a tower, but inside a well with wooden ramparts, right? Wooden ramps. But if you'd fallen down the middle, you essentially get reset all the way to the beginning, and you have to go up some stairwells, and then you have to jump your way back to the well. And the same kind of idea keeps reinforcing itself throughout the jumping puzzle. So when you get to the end of the well, you're on this like big stone, like a like broken off flooring. It looks like a castle had collapsed and left the floor there, right? So you look around and there's like a kind of a cave kind of looking thing with one side like open to the environment. And at the end of that is little like a toppy up part, and then you turn right. And again, it doesn't feel like you even should be able to do any of this. It doesn't even feel like a dungeon.
Like I had actually give you instructions on like, okay,
pillars there.
Yeah, I had like to give you instructions because you couldn't even see it. I was like, I was like on the opposite side. I'm like, okay, now keep running. Now stop. Now turn to your right. Now you should be able to jump from there.
What do you mean turn to my right? Because it looks like the path keeps going upwards. And I look up and you can't walk up there. And he goes, turn right. I'm like, what? I turn around and there's like collapsed pillars. Like they look like straight up. There's these square versions of those Roman style huge pillars, right? But collapsed to my right off this like really small like rock outcropping to even make that first jump to the first pillar. And I'm there and I turn around and there's spikes there.
Well, and before you go any further, by the time he was there, I had moved on. Like I said, there's those two pillars and then there's a platform that has like a couple of dragon heads on the platform.
Yeah.
From there, you make a couple more jumps, probably about another like three to five more jumps. And you eventually end up on this platform where there are these chains that you can pull.
Yeah.
And it turned out that each of those chains controlled different traps. These were the traps that ArenaNet was talking about.
Oh, gosh.
And one of those traps controlled those spikes. Another trap or another set of chains controlled the dragon heads breathing flames.
Yeah, they breathe flames into the entire platform.
Hang on, can I ask a question about this?
Yeah.
What was at the end of it to make this worth it?
We'll get there.
Right now, it sounds like it better be like the purple dildo bat from Saints Row the Third. They just put that into Guild Wars 2.
Shinboy, what's your question?
I definitely think what we should do, it's not really a question, more of a suggestion, is get like 3/4 of the way into this thing next beta weekend and just camp there.
Oh, God.
Kill anyone that shows up.
No, we just
agree.
That happened to us.
I found I know the perfect place to do that, and we will definitely get to that.
Would, say, I was playing as a thief, scorpion wire, would you be able to, pull people off of ledges?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I imagine so, yeah.
Because that's the thing.
That would be the ultimate.
It might work, because everyone was on, in inverted commas, the same side. Like, friendly fire wasn't on, so we couldn't tell at the time. Maybe you can. You probably could, yeah.
That would be awesome, just standing across the way, just scorpion wire.
It would be the biggest jerk move.
And you know what else was awesome? Was when your guild members were finally getting like their third try at a jump, and you activate the spikes
to cripple
them.
So I was there. So I was there standing on that ledge, right? And there's a spikes on the pillar I had to jump to. And Durin's like, "What? Huh? Those weren't there before." So he turns around a corner and he goes down like this weird path. He kind of disappears from my map for a bit. And then I hear him over mumble. He's like, "Oh, there's some traps here." So he turns on one, right? And Tarkin's behind me, and this gigantic motherfucking boulder comes down and squashes Tarkin. And I'm just standing there on the outcrop, and he turned around, and I just see him die, and he's like, "Whoops."
To be fair, before that, I did kill 4 other people with the fire trap. And did have a guy call me a dick.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So we're saying that. I'm like, "Don't do that again." And he turns around, and this dude just...
The guy that called me a dick that I had killed was now in control of the spike trap.
Just pulling the spike trap over and over again. And to give it a perspective, something we discovered during this was that there's no momentum really in Guild Wars 2, so you don't have to make a run to start the jump. Like you can just kind of walk, shimmy over to the edge, hit the jump button while pressing the direction you want to jump to, and you essentially have full air control and you don't have to do any form of run up before the jump. Essentially, that was boiled down to there. But the problem is when you're crippled, which is what those spike traps did, it inhibits your ability to make that jump in the first place.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. So we were standing there and I jumped up to this spike thing just to see how much damage it did while the dickhead was still pulling that lever over and over again, or pulling those chains over and over again. And I try to make the second jump and I just fall and I die. immediately insta-give on the ground. It got to the point where we were like, "Holy shit." I didn't even realize that I was being at a height where I could die, because I'm a warrior, so I have 26,000 health and heaps of armor, but still I just got gibbed. So I'm like, "Guys, can you help me?" Because I didn't want to reset the entire dungeon by respawning. So Tarkin makes the jump. The dickhead pulls the trap again. He tries to make the second jump. He dies as well. So we're sitting there, 2 corpses at the bottom of this giant pillar, and we're just like, "Oh my god, we have to redo the whole thing."
And then you were asking me to come down and raise you guys. I was like, "Hell no, I finally made it up here."
So Subjugation, who was also with us at the time, he kind of caught up with us after we would be like... Because all you hear on Mumble, because everyone, half the girl was on Mumble, right? So all they'd be hearing is like, "Oh, fuck. Oh, god damn it. Oh my god, the spikes. That jackass." Stuff like that is what we'd be shouting over Mumble. And so it comes up, and he finds a stairwell that leads down from where the boulders start and where the first ledge to get to the first pillar starts. And he comes down and he rezzes us like a pro, like a G. I'm calling out right now. He's the biggest bro. He totally rezzes us. And so what this sets up is, even though there's very many difficult jumping sections, there's
many resets until, well, for this first section anyway. Let's just say for the first section, it's really easy to reset yourself to kind of where you left off.
Wait, this is still the first section?
This is just the first section.
Oh god.
This is the first set of traps that you come across. Damn. So the traps signify the end of the section.
Yeah, this is just to get to the first
set
of traps.
This story is
going to
be an hour and a half. Jeez.
No, the rest of this we'll go through a little bit quicker, but
yeah, I just want to like set up the mindset, just
the idea,
the type of stuff,
yeah.
Yeah, that you're kind of looking at.
And then you had to beat Castlevania 3 inside Guild Wars 2 and opened up a little tiny emulator.
Try Dark Souls, but we'll get to that.
So after, as you said, a series of jumps, finally me and Tarkin get to the ledge. After retries like that and dying and getting rezzed and trying again, we finally get to the ledge with the traps on it, and then we start progressing deeper into the dungeons.
Well, so specifically, the dickhead finally left, and so I took over control of the spikes so that you guys could get across.
Yeah.
I don't know, Durin. I think Dark Souls would actually probably be a bit easier than this.
The next area?
And I've beaten Dark Souls, so let me just
You haven't heard nothing yet.
So the next area, after you finally get through all of that, the first thing you see is there's a staircase leading down, and just before the staircase, there's basically a torch dispenser you can grab your torch out of.
And
you
wasn't
need
really
that
obvious.
Torch to turn
it was,
out.
It said, like be like light. It had a really weird name, and you didn't really realize that you kind of needed to grab something from there
until you went about halfway down the staircase.
Yeah, you got. So let's set this up. So we get to that. Well, I died a bunch of times, and Durin got there much before me. But like, so I assume this is how it was for him because it was like this for me. You stand at the top of the stairs, you see this like dispenser, and you're like, whatever. I don't need anything. I'm pretty good where I am. I'm at full health, whatever. So I go down the stairs, and halfway down the stairs, it just goes dark. It just goes completely, totally, and utterly pitch black.
I couldn't see the
fucking thing.
And now, welcome to the entire next section.
It's Tomb of the Giants from Dark Souls.
Yeah,
we're out of section one.
So yeah, we're out of section one
now.
Section
one was to get the first set of traps. Section two was to get to a second set of traps. And the weird thing is, to get to section three, it wasn't really particularly obvious. You had to kind of go like around this corner, around this like a couple of like fallen down walls and stuff. To get to this
small jump
to like a pillar in the middle of nowhere, and then look around, you can kind of see this area that's a ledge that you can get to that has these stairs on it, which kind of felt like
you were breaking the game the whole
way. It didn't feel like you were going down a dungeon. It felt like you were just like exploiting things they've left in the environment. It was a weird thing. But yeah,
so
we'll skip over the second section.
Yeah, so go ahead and push this along. So I grabbed the torch and headed down there. I actually didn't hesitate at all. I saw the torch, and I guess just the like gamer mindset clicked in. Like, oh, I need to go grab that. So I grabbed it and run down. And what we're met with at that point is probably the most devious section of the entire thing. Because we weren't kidding when we said like it's utter blackness and welcome to the whole next section. Because there is no lighting in the entire section.
There's none.
Your torch is your lighting. And you are then jumping from square platform to square platform to
outer darkness,
wall ledges in complete darkness. The only way you can see it all, and I actually found out you have to have your graphics set up to a certain extent in order to actually see the flame from your torch that you could throw your torch and it would land somewhere.
Oh yeah, so
in order to see
is,
that flame and
torches,
actually have lighting from it, you had to have your graphics up high enough.
Exactly, like you pick up the torches right, and they replace your weapons, and which is an interesting thing because this is a PvP dungeon. I don't know like how this is going to work in the future, but anyway, so they replace your weapons, which means that you're walking down to the dungeon and you have two options. You have throw a torch at your feet and throw a torch it doesn't even give you an aiming reticule. You kind of just have to like guess. Good thing is you have infinite torches apparently, but straight up, the only way to light your path is to throw a torch at your feet so you can kind of get an idea of what's like in your general, like immediate vicinity. And then maybe you'll see the edge of a jumping like platform in the very edge of your vision, because beyond that, it's just complete darkness.
Yeah,
so you have to throw another torch to that thing and try to aim it just right so your torch actually lands on it. It's actually more difficult than it should be. And then the torch lands on that and lights the area around there. And then you make the
torches like stay there for a good while.
So there's about 30 seconds, maybe 40 seconds.
Okay, so it's not like Minecraft, not sure. You just throw them everywhere and they stay there.
But the problem with it is that would be so good. Is that even with your graphics turned up, the lighting that comes off of it isn't really that strong. It's just enough that you can, for a few seconds, see that there is something there.
And if you more so when you're lighting for, without your graphics turned up, that's really fucked up. I didn't even know that was an issue.
Yeah, because I had mine turned down because we were testing the stream, and I had to drop the graphics in order for the stream to run properly, and I was running it like medium settings.
Right.
And the settings I had, that you know, one of those settings in there had, I guess, maybe the lighting set to low. And because of that, there was no lighting actually coming off of the torches. So the only indicator I had of where the torch was landing or what, or that there was something there at all, is when you throw a torch, you also see like a white, like kind of a chalk outline of, of kind of the area of its lighting, I guess.
Wow, okay.
And so that's all I had to go by until I upped my graphics. So basically moving along through this, so you're making these jumps to these platforms, and eventually you come across a longer platform along the wall that has these dragon heads.
Oh, God.
It turned out shot arrows. They were just automatically triggered. We thought maybe some douchebag was on the other side triggering it, but it turned out they were automatic. And not only do they shoot arrows, but the arrows do a knockback, which is just far enough to knock you off of it.
Is there anything about this you're describing to me that I can't relate to Demon Souls and Dark Souls?
So once you get past that, which we learned, you basically have to roll through it, but you have to you have to roll through at a specific time so that you are invulnerable to the first and second arrows.
Yeah.
Once you get past that, you'll get hit by the third, but you have to angle it so much so that like when you get hit by the third, you're hit by it closest to it so that it doesn't knock you off. Exactly.
Yeah.
And hope that you were lucky because there were still some times where it did knock me off.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
I'm pretty happy that they put one of those walls near the start of that darkness area, because when we got to later and there's that wall of death, the death wall, the piece of shit that killed everyone. I'm happy they put that there. Because remember, when you get knocked off a ledge in any of this entire dungeon, if you miss a jump because everything's dark, or you get knocked off by those arrow things, you are in this area, the start of the darkness.
Yeah, if you get if you get knocked off or fall off or miss a jump or whatever at any point, you restart at the beginning of the darkness area again. So when you eventually get past that first arrow part, you make a few more jumps, and the jumps start getting smaller. It's not the big squares anymore. It's kind of slightly smaller things.
Yeah.
And you eventually end up in the other room, and you kind of you get a couple of pathways, some of the easy jumps, and then that eventually leads you to the worst wall of all.
Yeah.
Which was basically that same arrow trap, but there were now three of them in a row.
So nine arrow shooting things.
And there was just enough space between each set that what we learned is you had to then dodge through the one set and then dodge through the second set. And then it turned out, after I tested it, you don't want to dodge through the third set because there's nothing over there. At the second set, you turn and there's actually a narrow path for you to jump onto. And those are the hardest jumps of all, probably the entire thing.
So not only have you gone through all this darkness and all these difficult jumps and this ridiculous arrow wall and this second wall of death arrow wall with nine arrow traps, which you only need to trigger six, and it's not very like apparent when you first go through it.
Yeah. But then after that, you're jumping onto 4x4s.
Yeah, exactly. You're jumping onto like things so narrow that you can overjump them by like half a character width.
Yeah, it's
ridiculous.
And then even like you're jumping from one onto another, and they're just real thin planks of wood. And then you actually have to make an angled jump from one to another.
When I failed that the second time, I just quit. I just left the dungeon.
And the worst part is that angled jump is the last one of that section. After that, you walk through and you're now in the next section. And the next one isn't nearly as bad. It has some annoying jumps in it. It's basically kind of a circular room, kind of a Coliseum-looking area. And you're making some really weird jumps in there, but it's mostly like weird angles. But we learned at the very end of that one, there's a really fun trap that you can set off. And this is where we could totally camp if we wanted to.
Yeah.
Because it's at the very top. You're completely safe where you are. But what it does is it lets out a set of like three mobs. One of them, they're all level 82. One of them is a veteran. And so basically anybody who misses a jump is going to land right down there on, you know, the Coliseum floor with all those mobs.
Oh my God. I never got to this room. I never got to this room.
And it was, I think, was it me and Tarkin that made it through?
You and Axe got through the first.
It was me and Axe. That's right.
You guys were probably the first people in the entire server to finish.
So me and Axe were there at the top, and there was another set of guys that were about halfway up the room when we let those animals out. And we just saw them freeze. And they just cursed us out over chat. And they did not move again until the animals went away.
Exactly, because if you
eventually they do reset and they go back in.
God damn.
And then from there, the last set actually isn't too terrible. There's a few more jumps. There's another trap that or another wall that I think shoots fire or something. But it's nothing too terrible. And from that point, it's a few kind of weird jumps again. But seriously, the worst thing of all is really just the dark room. That is the most devious jumping puzzle I've ever seen in a video game.
I'm not a person to rage quit in games. I'm not a person who looks at a problem and beats my head against it for about an hour and a half to 2 hours and gets almost to the end and then quits. Like, I'm usually a person who goes, well, I've already spent this much time on it, I may as well keep going. But this just pushed me over the edge. It was the line that I did not cross, and I'm very happy that I didn't. But apparently, for Durin, it was worth it in the end. What'd you get to in the end?
There was, when we finally got to the very end, there was just a massive, massive chest. I mean, this thing was probably almost as tall as we were.
Whoa. Did you
see
any screen caps? I didn't see any screen caps of this.
I didn't. I didn't even think, you know, honestly, like that, what I was going to get to next is, I don't even remember what was in it. Because it didn't matter what was in the chest. All that mattered was I actually completed it.
Oh man. Yeah.
Like I could have completed it and there not been a chest, and it would have been completely fucking worth it to me.
It would have been great if like
especially given the axe and I were the first ones there.
It would have been great if all those in there was like three copper and a rusty dagger.
No, I think we got some like badges.
Keep that rusty
honor.
Dagger for the end when you find this like mystic pond that you God. Put it in, it becomes Excalibur. No. I think you got like greens and stuff from. I remember the items being pretty good.
We got like a lot of stuff. We got some badges of honor, and then I think we did get some gold out of it, and we got a few items out of there, and it was, you know, some pretty decent stuff that you got out of it. So it's definitely.
But
worth
it wasn't
really
proportional. Like the reason to do this entire thing was A, if you hate yourself and you're a masochist, and B, getting to the end was its own like reward. Like that was the point.
I'm not buying that. That's BS.
Yeah, it was.
Speaking
it was,
of,
it was something, and I will never
puzzles,
do it again.
You'll never do it again. I'm not gonna.
I will never do it again.
Atlantic. No, what am I saying? Not Atlantic. Niagara Falls.
What? We missed. What
yeah,
you
we're
said.
Watching that in the background while you guys are rambling.
Yeah.
There's they're
this
watching
guy
some
crossing Niagara Falls by a tightrope.
On a tightrope.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're watching some boring stuff. I'm watching baby puppies.
I was gonna say I'm watching what he's watching. I'm watching the baby puppies.
Wow. Okay. Those the full grown puppies.
These are baby puppies.
Yeah. These right. are baby ass.
Getting the message here. So we're gonna move on from the WW dungeon puzzle.
Oh, one of them's waking up.
And I'll do a little segment on WWE.
See, if I was back home, we'd have these in a stew, and it'd be fucking delicious.
No, I'm serious. Like, the mic is picking you up. God. That's bad.
God damn it.
No. So, Nubarama, no. What'd you do over the
well,
weekend?
It starts with a P, and it ends with an E. And it's not urine.
Yeah, I was going to say, what?
So I did a multitude of different mini dungeons. I attempted to Ascalon Catacombs, but I'll go into that later. So the majority of my gameplay was invested in just running around, getting skill points, finally getting my elites. So basically, I was around level 20 when I started the beta, got to level 35 by the end of the beta, and it was so fun.
So that's like a good 20 to 30 hours, isn't it?
Yeah.
From 20 to 35?
Yeah.
Something like that. Where did you spend most of your time? Was it the human area or?
It's probably the human area. There's this level 25 to 35 zone called Gendarmerica.
Oh, really?
Plains. Yeah, in the human area. Yeah, that's where
that
I spent
awesome.
My time. So it's the area just north of Lion's Arch. You just leave Lion's Arch.
Oh right, yeah, I saw that on the map because I only got to Kessex Hills. I never got to the higher. I think I only got to like level 26 or something.
I don't want to talk about more fucking jumping puzzles, but
did you do any? But like, you did
there
some,
were two.
Right? There's quite a few in this game. I was surprised that there's quite a few jumping puzzles. I found one myself in Kessex Hills.
Yeah, the one on the waterfall.
Yeah,
yeah,
which was nice.
One.
It wasn't too difficult.
There
it wasn't
was
too
one.
Long.
There's a skill quest with a jumping puzzle around a wall.
Okay.
And then finally, there was another jumping puzzle.
But this game isn't about jumping, so...
It is actually... I like how they stagger those around. Like, too bad everything's fucking useless from the... Oh, God, he's walking. Okay, everything's useless from the jumping puzzle.
Right.
But, so there were two mini dungeons.
I take you to skill points. Pardon? I think a few of the jumping puzzles take you to skill points.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. And a lot of them end in chests. But again, like... Depends whether you're into the whole jumping puzzle thing. Like, I can see myself...
It's like a fun distraction, if anything.
Yeah. Like, the problem was we did it pretty much as soon as we started playing for the beta weekend, and we did probably the worst or hardest jumping puzzle available to us.
I hope it was the hardest.
Oh, God. I bet there's more difficult ones in like the end game of PvE, but like a lot of the jumping puzzles are pretty short. Like, the one we talked about just then took us about 2 hours to 3 hours.
I would love if that was Guild Wars 2 end game. It's like, we don't have rating. We have platforming.
The fact that they called it a dungeon really scares me, because if the other dungeons are like that, oh, my God. I'm just quitting now. I'll just see me. You'll see me in WVW. Fuck you, PvE. Fuck you. No, so what events did you do? Like, did you do anything fun? Did you like anything?
Well, there were two mini dungeons. Well, one was smaller than the other in Guild Wars 2 PvE. So there's one dungeon underwater in like some sort of ruined area underwater in the char area, and it's like a level 25, 28 zone or something like that. And basically, it's like a ruined underwater temple, and there's a bunch of different puzzles you have to go through, fight the Flame Legion underwater, which doesn't make sense.
Because they're Flame Legion.
Flame
Legion. But there's like cold torches that light up, blah, blah, blah. And there's this huge boss fight where three of us try to kill this champion boss, and we wiped, so I quit. And then I quit then I went to bed, and then I woke up the next morning, and there's this other dungeon that's full of traps. Up north in Gindarin Fields. It's like a crypt. And basically there were ooze, those, you know, like the prismatic ooze in the original Guild Wars, basically like that. And there were a bunch of traps where people would instantly die whenever they walked.
So are these jumpy puzzles dungeons as well, or are they
No, these like are just traditional dungeons. Yeah, these are... It was a really short one, and the chest at the end...
It seems like... Because Arena's used a couple of different terms, right? It seems like mini-dungeon, like what we originally assumed was a mini-dungeon, inverted commas, means...
It was called a crypt. The area was called the crypt. Okay. And it was basically a crypt. It was very small. It's like a...
How long did it take?
You needed like a 4-man group to do it, to be honest, because there's a champion spider at the end that you need to fight and stuff like that, and it's a small puzzle. Like, you need to destroy walls or something like that.
Okay.
It was very short. Maybe, I'd say, 15 minutes up.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, as I was saying, like, mini dungeons in inverted commas is apparently something that's quite frequent in PvE. And I think the major difference between a mini dungeon and a normal dungeon is they're completely not instanced. Yeah. So, like, you literally just wander into it. Yeah,
mini dungeons are just, like, sort of, like, special areas.
Yeah, exactly. And you find a lot of them of different types.
There's something like that near, in one of the beginning zones for Char.
Right. Yeah. Do you want to run us through what your experience with it was?
Me?
Yeah, sure. Norsen, you brought it up, so...
Well, nothing much, really. I mean, it was just basically, there was one event, and there were multiple bosses that you had to go through, and basically, I lucked out.
So did it come up as a dynamic event in your map? The one I found didn't.
Yeah, for me, I don't think it...
Okay. Yeah, I don't think it was, but I could be wrong.
Right. Cause, yeah, it's amazing how much content is actually hidden in Guild Wars 2. Like, straight up, your normal, everyday dynamic events and your personal story and all that stuff is pretty well pointed out to you. You're walking through an area, a big orange circle appears on your map, and you go that direction, and you do an event. But it's amazing how much stuff, like, if you just, like, kind of go around a corner somewhere, or you, like, look behind a waterfall in our case and stuff like that, that you find, like, a mini dungeon or, like, it's just crazy stuff just buried within the environment. It's kind of amazing. And kind of scary at the same time. Like, if you're aiming for full completion, then yeah, it's going to be quite a difficult task, I think, in Guild Wars 2. But Noob,
I'm totally going to do that.
Oh, God. Good luck. Good luck, mate.
One thing I encountered, especially with Underwater Dungeon, is that if people are too spread out and you don't get an actual group going, you're not going to be finding random people in these dungeons. You're going to be going at this with, like, too few people. That's what I ran into. There were only, like, four people, including one giant bomb guy. And we did not have enough manpower to defeat that boss.
But was it a champion or was it actually an actual boss?
It was a boss.
Because sometimes bosses, even though they're frequently called Champion X, like they're generally quite different in that they usually have like multiple forms. They transform like halfway through the fight, and they have like weird area of like environmental effects and stuff. Like, was it one of those bosses or was it just
he
a champion?
He fired molten lava balls, but I don't know. That might be just a generic thing. But I never saw that.
Cool.
You know, lava underwater.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
It's lava blobs. Anyways, so if you're gonna go take a crack at some of these engines, I'd say you get people with you. Like, don't expect... Like, there were a lot of people running around, but they immediately wiped, and I'm like, oh, these people are fucking useless. And then, you might want to get help on your own. That's what I recommend. Can I complain about trade tiers or skill or utilities?
We'll get that as a separate part. Because we did last week. We did, like, a good 15-minute rant on it last week, but
I discovered even more blasphemy, but I'll go into that later then. what else have I done? So I was just running around doing skill quests. There were quite a few broken things I ran across, like a broken skill quest, but I guess they'll probably...
Oh, right, gotcha.
Beta is beta.
What else? So, Athlon Catacombs.
Hey, finally. Okay, cool. Like, I was wondering where you're going to get to this. So it's surprising how much you glossed over the rest. Did you like PvE? Like, we'll get to Athlon Catacombs in a second, but did you like
PvE? No,
I
hate PvE. That's why I played the entire beta, because I hate PvE.
So you did enjoy, like, did you find it very, like, what about it did you most?
Because after a while, like, because I was actually just trying to level so I can do Ascalon Catacombs.
Okay, right, so you're kind of rushing.
So I was trying my best to level, so I was running across zones trying to do, what is it called? Like, level up? And then...
What do you mean?
Just finding dynamic events was mostly what I was trying to do.
And finding new areas.
Did they lower the amount of dynamic events that happen in
the
map? Because for Gundar and Fields, it felt like dynamic events.
I think they lowered the frequency of a lot of them, which is a good thing.
Yeah, because I played in that zone too, and it didn't seem like they were happening that often. There was one in that small little town, I forgot what it was, where like the centaurs kept attacking.
Yeah, like you have to defend against 6 waves.
Yeah, but like other than that, there was like none in that area.
Wow, okay.
So also, before I go to Ascalon Catacombs, because that's going to take a big chunk of my section. No, it won't. But I discovered my love for cooking in Guild Wars, and I decided to become a professional Guild Wars cook. Within
the greatest chef in all of Tyrion.
I spent 1.5 gold on cooking. Whoa, so I boosted my cooking level to 120-something.
Holy crap.
Basically, what I did was
Do you know there's a maximum on these? Is there a maximum?
The highest thing I saw was 400 level cooking. Like, ingredients for using ingredients.
And you get XP for doing this stuff, right?
Yes,
right?
I leveled up really fast. Like, I was so engrossed in the cooking aspect because cooking is so fun.
How does cooking work in Guild Wars?
Basically, it is you can either buy ingredients or collect them yourself from either killing moas to get meat, picking up herbs from the ground, doing karma quests, and getting stuff from karma vendors. Or you can just directly buy it off the Master Chef, but he only has a limited range of ingredients.
Okay.
So basically, and then so you collect all of the ingredients you need, and then you start cooking, right? And
What does it look like?
Cooking, I don't know about how crafting works, but cooking, you discover new items by like randomly picking ingredients.
Yeah, it's the same way, because I got up to like 110. I think, as a jeweler.
Okay.
Oh, wow, okay.
So I was discovering new things like pasta, and it's going to be so delicious. Starting up a private, a restaurant in the guild, and supplying the guild with goods at, like, 2 gold.
Oh, you sent me some pasta.
Yeah.
My character was relatively unimpressed by the pasta.
Yeah, it was awesome. So I spent around, it's quite expensive. Like, it's an expensive.
You should have used some squid ink in that pasta.
Oh, what does it work? Is there like 4 things that you put ingredients into?
And then it's like, okay, well, you've discovered a new ingredient.
Basically. And it doesn't work like, so how, well, just to break it down for people listening, so crafting Guild Wars 2 is a thing. You pick two crafting professions when you walk into Guild Wars 2, but at the same time, you don't lose any progress on any professions that you've done if you switch professions. So, for example, you can do, like, armor crafting for 20 levels, then weapon crafting for 20 levels, and then switch them both to cooking and jewelry, and you're keeping those 20 levels in your bank, but you're now leveling up two different skills.
Right.
I don't know what the real benefit is of having a limited crafting system if you're keeping all your XP anyway.
Right,
it's kind of useful because if I look at the guild's like listing, I can see who's good at cooking and who's good at crafting.
That's
so if
me,
I wanted
by the way.
To ask those people,
I'm top cook in Tyria. I want to be the very
top jeweler
best cook
in Tyria.
Like, that's my mission, to become the bestest cook in all of Tyria.
Well... But yeah, so essentially, once you've done that, you find these master chefs around the world who, A, sell you, like, rarer
and then you duel them in the gym.
What?
What?
Okay. It's kind of cool that they sell you rare ingredients. I love the idea of there being rare ingredients in Guild Wars 2 for cooking. And right. They do the same thing for like armor crafting, obviously. Like you get rare metals and stuff. But I love the fact that they've put in such like a complex and like a interestingly thought out cooking mechanic in Guild Wars 2.
I'm going to make a cod piece made out of unobtainium as soon as I can.
to reflect your real life status, right?
Right.
Rare retainer.
To reflect my LARP armor, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Alrighty.
So you go into the cooking interface. I think you run up to like a pot.
Or like a fire or something. It's something really weird. I don't remember any of it.
Again, awesome. Like, you are this great adventurer who's saving the world, but also a master chef. It's pretty awesome.
I'm sure, because the original Guild Wars, consumables, it's a booming industry. It's like a multi-trillion dollar industry in the original Guild Wars.
That's because there's no real, like, generation of consumables in the original Guild Wars. Like, there's no, like, crafters in the original Guild Wars.
Right. No, well, I made most of my money crafting concepts.
Well, you just sort of get the things and take it to a dude and trade them.
Oh, right. So, yeah, it's like equivalent of a trading system.
So, like,
but here is
like
crafting,
all of these all benefits of the even work in PV or world versus world versus world. I'm assuming the benefits are huge.
Exactly. Like, so what you do is when you complete a cooking thing, it gives you, like, for example, spaghetti in your inventory, and that's literally consumable. So it lasts for like 10 minutes or whatever, and they give you a constant single buff. I don't think you can stack multiple of them. I'm pretty sure you can't
stack multiple if they're different, I believe.
Oh, okay. So there's like different subtypes.
Because like they had this in Aeon, which don't play that game. But anyway, I did cook
Aeon.
Never play
Aeon.
But yeah, you could have like a food and like a drink at the same time.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. That's kind of cute. But they weren't huge in bonuses. I think it was like only plus 10 toughness or something for 10 minutes. But still something. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was
assuming as you get higher level, the bonuses are obviously... Raider.
Well, I hope they don't get too huge, because even though it's interesting having like the idea of having like a world versus world team and a cooking team to like support them, it sounds fun and hilarious. But I don't particularly want to have to do that. So even though you enjoy cooking now, I'm not going to like relegate you to that task if you're
Why
the
not?
Only one.
I want to be the cooking god of all of Tyria. I want to be like Ash Ketchum except cooking. But continuing on,
you don't want to cook your Pokemon though. That's a bad idea.
But the dogs look so delicious. Okay, no.
So yeah, you get XP for discovering new
like,
recipes.
When I try to do cooking, like when you first sign up, it's like, do you want to become a cook? Whatever. They're like, it is the most time-consuming and expensive out of all of the other crafting professions.
Really?
That's what they told me, yeah. When I tried to do it.
Wait, so the NPC told you that?
So basically, I spent a good 30 silver on ingredients, and then I spent a gold on a cooking outfit from the gem store.
What's the benefit of that?
Nothing. It adds.
Okay, so you spent 30 silver on
cooking. And then another. Immersion. I'm like, I gotta have the cooking outfit if I'm gonna be a chef. And wow, the aviators were cool, but that's not even the cooking outfit, so it doesn't matter. So I embarked on my cooking adventure. I'm hoping to spin off my franchise into multiple different branches across guilds.
All right.
But, we'll see. Do that later.
So just before we move on to Ascalon Catacombs, I love the fact that we keep pushing this back because it's one of the more interesting things of today. But Shinboy, You did jewel crafting. Was that? Did you do that this beta, or did you start that last beta?
I started last beta, got up to like 60-something,
right.
And this beta, I pushed it up to like 110.
Okay.
Suck it, so I did all that in one beta.
So did you, does it, do all the crafting ways work the same? Like, you have masters, you buy materials from them, and then you can find them in the world as well, and you, the same kind of crafting mechanics?
Yeah.
Or? Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, you take, like, you start to realize what the recipes are, like, what you have to put into discover recipe.
Right.
Like, say you take your starts out with copper, and you make, like, a setting, and then, like, a band. You obviously, if you're going to take that band, a setting, and a gem, you're going to make a ring.
Okay, cool.
So it's just a matter of taking all the gems and discovering the rings for those individual gems.
Okay, that sounds pretty cool. Actually, that sounds rather. Yeah.
It's kind of like overwhelming when you first look at it.
Yeah.
Then if you actually like figure it out, it's really simple to figure out what goes together. And
right.
When you like the way it works is when you drag your first ingredient into like the thing where you add like the up to four ingredients,
right.
It grays out whatever you can't mix with it.
Yeah. So like the rest of like, and the other crafting methods do this as well. So for example, if you're making armor and there's four slots in the crafting thing. So what you do is you fill any amount of those four slots over one, obviously, and it'll come up with the final item. So essentially you drop in the first item. So for example, if you put steel in there, the first slot of the four, then anything in your inventory that's also applicable to that crafting method. So for example, if you had copper in your inventory and you had iron in your inventory, those
are
really
level
out
restricted.
If they can't
so you
exist.
Need to be a certain
yeah.
level before you can invent or stuff.
Exactly. Like some
yeah.
some items you can only start crafting with if you got into crafting 100, for example.
Like it got to the point where I was like mixing things together and it was like, you can't do this until you're like crafting 200. I was like, oh, okay.
Wow, okay. Yeah, so like stuff like that comes into it. But essentially, at no point can you waste materials because it only lets you put them into the pot, like the metaphorical pot, if you A, can craft it, and B, those two materials actually mix. It's kind of a cool system. I like the fact that
yeah.
you can't waste.
And you can't, like, discover something again.
Right.
Obviously.
Yeah. No, but once you know it, you know it. Like, can you skip straight to recipes and craft from that method, or do you always have to
Yeah, obviously. Once you discover it, it gets added to a list, which is all categorized. Like, for me, it was categorized by, like, components, like, refining, necklaces, rings.
Oh, cool.
All that. So you could, like, open and close all the drop-down menus and stuff.
Right. And then you essentially use those as shortcuts to craft. You don't have to always drag and drop.
Yeah, like, you click on that, it shows you what you need. And if you have enough for something, it'll put in parentheses the number of them you can make with that.
Oh, cool. Nice.
So say I made a certain amount of settings and a certain amount of, like, bands.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, chains. And I had, like, three of the same type of gem. It would say, like, okay, you can make three necklaces of this type.
Oh, wow. Okay. And did you find that the stuff you were making was appropriate to your level? What did you
yes,
find about this?
I got to the point where I was making like green level 30 items when I was level like 27.
Okay, cool. That's I'm not sure
so,
that's a good thing
or
bad
thing. A lot of the stuff I made was really useful. I was trying to give it away to people because I had no use for it.
Oh right, that's cool.
Yeah, like I was making things that had, like, you could put, like, up to plus 20-something precision on it or plus 20-something power.
Wow.
It was pretty good.
Holy shit. Yeah, because, all right, to put things in perspective, there's your character has, obviously, armor and all that other stuff, but you also have a bunch of accessory slots. So that includes something for your shoulders, so a cape, for example, two things for your ears, inverted commas, like the symbol is ears, but there can be stuff as like jugs, things you carry around on your character, and two slots for rings, and I think there's a slot for an amulet.
Wait,
as well.
I can get jewelry for my jugs?
Yes, no, you can get jug jewelry for your jugs. It's pretty awesome.
I mean, you saw my necromancer. I mean,
yeah, man.
She's an accessorized.
She was a pretty
I took
lady.
A bunch of screenshots. I printed it out. I'm taping it on my pillow.
Can you send me some of them?
Yeah,
while
that's
at
good.
It?
So
I'll send you some
also,
from my
also
for like
the...
10 minutes.
Awesome. Can you?
She looked like more
so basically. So these jewels, they're yeah. are they basically like tassels?
Yes.
So your character
yes,
has six
are.
Slots
awesome.
For accessories, and You essentially have to find them in the world, get them from the trading post, or pretty much craft them. There are very few ways of finding them. They're really actually the loot tables for them are very low. Like the probability is very low. So it's very difficult in general to find good jewelry and karma vendors usually only sell maybe one or two pieces of jewelry each, and you only really unlock most of them by doing heart quests or renowned dynamic events or however they want to call them. But so jewelry is actually a very rarefied thing, it was too. And I actually find that people like you who do jewel crafting are probably going to be some of the most sought after people in Guild Wars 2.
Fuck you, food's more important than jewelry.
Especially in structured PvP, like in a lot of cases, people are walking in because there's, when you go into structured, you're set to level 80, but the only way to get like jewelry and stuff is by winning tournaments and stuff and getting tournament rewards.
Look, noob, I heard that, and I'll have you know that MMOs take place in a post-scarcity world.
But good food. I'll become, like, the best chef. I'll be, like, the... Who's a good chef? I don't know. I don't follow chef. Who's that guy? Who's that cannibal? Who? It's, like, Richard Muse or something. Who cut up, like...
Anyway, so, yeah, it's kind of cool that jewelcrafting is a thing. I actually want to experiment. I'm probably going to make my own characters spec into jewel crafting as well, because it is a rare thing.
Don't encroach on my business.
I don't want to go to you for my jewels, motherfucker. I'm going to put myself out the way I want to customize that shit. But no. Okay, so we'll rewind it back. That's a little tip into crafting in Guild Wars 2. And to be honest, like, it isn't too new a thing, crafting MMOs. Like, most people will probably, like, I wanted to include this part, this segment, because some people aren't used to it, but you'd find crafting is a thing in many places and isn't particularly new to Guild Wars 2. So even though the crafting methods of Guild Wars 2 are pretty well fleshed out, and I think both of you liked crafting, the fact that you took it to level 100 plus means you both enjoyed it. Is that right?
Yeah, it was really fun.
So
I made awesome stuff. So
exactly, and so like, it is cool in Guild Wars 2, but again, like, it isn't going to be a core mechanic in that. In the end, you can always get stuff off the trading post from karma vendors or finding it in the world. You don't have to craft.
It's not new to Guild Wars 2, no, but in a lot of other MMOs, it's pretty terrible. So it's nice to have an MMO that has a well thought out crafting system in it from the start.
I thought most places were really. Oh, go on, Shimmer.
Oh, okay. Well, the thing that I like, which, like, other MMOs that I've played, the crafting systems, like, I was making useful items right away, as opposed to having to go through all these, bad items or work orders or whatever, just to get my level up, just to make things that were semi-useful.
Well, and you didn't have the idea of, like, trying to craft something and, oh, sorry, you failed, everything's destroyed. Yeah. And that's a really, really popular thing, at least with Eastern MMOs.
Right.
Which are pretty much kind of, when you look at the MMO market, most of them are Eastern MMOs. There's not really a ton of Western MMOs.
Like MMOs,
MMOs
from Afghanistan?
Shin, you played Ion, right?
Oh my god.
Yes.
You remember the two separate bars?
Let's talk about Ion.
Hang on.
Yes, I know. Yeah. The failure and success bars?
Yep. Yes, there were two separate bars when you were crafting an Ion. One for failure and one for success. And whichever one filled up the most, that determined the outcome.
And occasionally one of them would just randomly get a boost.
Occasionally
one
will just randomly get a boost.
So take everything.
I'm not going to get into it, but it's not nearly as bad as Final Fantasy XIV. That's all.
Holy shit! Okay, you guys both say the crafting is pretty cool in Guild Wars 2.
Final Fantasy 14 has a crafting system. I'm surprised.
Final Fantasy 14 is still alive.
That game actually existed. I think it's just a myth.
It existed.
I need to grab the reins in this. I need to grab the reins in the conversation. Yeah. Let's just move on.
Please.
Crafting's
so
awesome. Guild Wars 2. Try it out. It's not needed. You can live without crafting, but it's pretty cool. So, Nubarama.
Is it my restaurant?
I've tried anything the whole time.
take us to the Castellan Catacombs. Right, what were your experiences with it? Tell us a story rather than just bossing over it.
So I got this group going. It was Tarkin, me, Sigs, and like two other randoms we picked up.
Because right. It was a level 30 dungeon, right?
Right, so there's two like sections. There's the story mode, which is for level 30s, or you can go below level 30, but it's recommended you're level 30.
Right.
Sorry. Okay.
Oh, for Christ's
sake. Recommended for level 30.
God.
Go on.
And there's the story, or there's the explorable area mode, which is for level 35s and up. And I attempted to do story mode. So we got. I'm like, all right, who wants to do Ascalon Catacombs? And then we got the highest levels in the guild to do Ascalon Catacombs. And then we're like, all right, let's find some pickup groups. So two random guys. And so we called them over. We found them. And then we're like, all right, let's do this.
Because this is an instance dungeon. You kind of want to have to go in instance, with five people, right?
Right. And then you get in there. Oh, he made it. Okay. Just saying, the tightrope guy, he made it.
He had a safety harness on. Doesn't count.
He did?
Well, yeah. Plus, also, these puppies on my stream were just delicious. They just got done playing.
Okay.
They had a playtime, and it was grand. And now this
fuck you guys. Fuck all you guys. I'm trying to run a show here.
Describe my great experiences. All right, so we're like,
wake up the puppies.
We're like excited, and we're going in, and then I spawned in alone, and then everyone else spawned in alone, and then it broke.
Whoa! What?
And then we're like, all right, let's do this again, and then we got in, and then two of the guys spawned in with me, but Tarkin and Siegs spawned in alone, and then we're like, let's do this again. And then everyone spawned alone again. And then we tried for 2 hours.
Holy shit.
Oh my god.
And you would think that a fucking instance dungeon for five people would at least, you know, have everyone go in into the same instance. They're in the same party, but no. No. No, you don't. So I didn't.
So you guys were definitely in the same party, and and only one person started the initiator, right?
Yep.
Well, and you still just couldn't get in for 2 hours.
If one person starts it, the whole party doesn't go in. You have to go in yourself. Yep, it doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah, that's standard instance stuff.
Maybe that's where this group actually is.
Yeah, because in structured PvP, only one person has to start the tournament. And all five people are.
In
a lot of MMOs, like, you enter and leave like individually.
But how does it keep it? Okay, so apparently it's obviously having issues keeping people together using the system. Right.
Like, there were three of us would spawn together, but the other two would never spawn, and then, like, the most we can get in the instance is three, and it's clearly not a dungeon with three people. And, yeah. Thanks, Arena.
So in general, you just couldn't get
shit. Fuck you.
Aslan Catacombs going.
No. I could not.
So much anger.
That was a bit of anger.
I wanted to play Aslan Catacombs. Ridlock was waiting for me to find Air, but I couldn't find her, because the party wouldn't form. God damn it.
Well, I'm sorry, happy.
Air's probably dead now. So
I was thinking of leveling
broken.
Hard leveling to 30 as fast as I could to do the dungeon with you guys, but apparently...
Oh yeah, same here. Like, one of the guys we were playing with, he was level 47.
What?
I saw someone who was level 51.
Like,
I took a screenshot
of it. And he's like, the only reason he joined our party was it's like, he had nothing to do. Like, he was bored. Like, I'm assuming that guy has, like, what kind of life does he lead?
Well, it's
kind of
cool, because, and we'll go into this maybe, I'm not sure if we'll go into this too deeply, but the cool thing about Guild Wars 2 is, if you're going to a lower level area as a higher level character, for example, Tarkin and Subjugation helped me out once or twice by heading to the level 8, I was in the level 8 char zone as a level 22 human, and they helped me out because I was being scaled down to the area and hit some tough spots. So not only was the case was I was way over level for the area, but being scaled down and still experienced an interesting, hard experience, but also I got full level 22 gear as drops and level 22 like kind of scaled quest rewards and dynamic event rewards from doing it. So it's actually a pretty cool system.
See, I didn't realize that was the case. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
it was weird.
Yeah, actually I experienced that playing with some friends who were like level 3 or 4. And
yeah.
It's strange, and I hear a lot of like complaints about that system.
What's such a good system? Oh my
god. Yeah, I know.
Like, what is because the complaint about?
The complaint is, the complaint that I heard was it was basically, they thought that, you know, you would be able to hit max level by just doing level 1 content over and over again.
Oh, right.
And yes, you can, the way the current system is,
you can technically
do that. Yeah, but it would be stupid to.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that?
The karma vendors you're unlocking aren't as good as the ones at the end game. Like, you're... Like, there's stuff that are limiting you, but they're not the
right,
obvious.
That level
like,
47 has really nice armor. I'll say that.
Well, it's the same as, like, you know, Diablo 3. You could probably hit max level going through, you know,
normal over
and
over,
over and over again if you really want. You could probably do it going through Act 1 normal over and over and over again if you really wanted to spend the time.
Yeah.
Like, that's not unique to this game.
Is that they're allowing you to play that way if you want to, because you will continue to get your level of quest rewards for the entire thing. So it's essentially coming back to the whole play the way you want to. Like, I don't know why there's
and the people that are having the issue with this, I think, are still stuck on the the standard MMO idea of leveling and zones, and that doesn't apply to Guild Wars 2.
Like, right. Yeah, exactly.
You level up to max level on quote-unquote level 1 content, but that content is the same content regardless of what level you are, so it's not really level 1 content. It's still going to be difficult for you at a high level.
Because you're going to be scaled down to level 1 when doing
it.
Exactly. Wait, so Rawson, I think you had something to say. Did you disagree with us? Do you have a different perspective on the matter?
No, wrong person.
Oh. Yeah. No, I was just going to say that I like the system because as like a level 25-ish Norn Thief, I went to the Char Starter area just to check it out.
Right.
And I killed two things and got two green drops. It was weird.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you totally... So, the thing is, right, and just to break it down, just in case anyone doesn't know what we're talking about. So, in Guild Wars 2, there's a pretty harsh level scaling system. And harsh is what I mean is, if your level 80 is going to a level 3 zone, he's going to be scaled down to level 3. Now, it doesn't work in reverse. If a level 3 goes to level 80 zone, he doesn't get scaled up at all. But you do have situations where... For example, a person in your guild is starting out the game, or making a new character for the first time, but he wants to play with friends. And in other MMOs, you'd have a situation where if a level 80 person whose only character is level 80, doesn't want to really start a new character with a new guy, goes to that area, he's just going to be freaking dominating, destroying everything there, right? He's not going to be challenged by the content, he's not going to be getting drops that he likes, he's just pretty much wasting time, and the only reason he's there is to play with his friend, and his friend's not having a good enough, particularly optimal experience, because he's playing with someone who's essentially destroying everything for him. He's not doing any work himself, right? In this system, because a high-level person can go to a low-level area and get scaled down but still get level-appropriate drops, it really, really helps the community, I think, of Guild Wars 2. Like, I found that the guild was, sticking together way more and, having way more fun together because people were not only getting, seeing new content. For example, if I did a human area and my friend is just starting in Norn, I can go there with my level 22 human and see the Norn area. If you hadn't done like me and done the Norn area before, you'd be seeing that for the first time with a new friend as your original characters, and you're still getting loot and so on and so forth and progressing levels. You actually get the XP you get from, not monsters, I don't think, but from the actual event rewards and stuff like that is also being scaled. Finding new areas is scaled XP as well. So in many cases, you're actually significantly benefiting from going back and helping new players. Like, it's an amazing system, I think. Wait, does anyone have anything else to add? Like, Durin?
No, I mean, pretty much covered it. I mean, we went and did the Norn stuff, I mean, being able to go in and see that story stuff at the level that that I was at, obviously way over level the area, but I was able to still go and enjoy that stuff.
Yeah, with another person and
exactly. Like being able to, like, I'm thinking of, I'm still trying to convince my wife that she totally would want to play this game, and if she decides, post launch that she wants to play it, it's not going to really be that big of a deal for me to then go back and play through her story stuff right along with her with whatever level my character is. Like, we can still play together even with these level disparities.
Yeah, it's like a really happy system.
Add something real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of those green drops that I got, which was what surprised me the most, was actually something significantly better than the gear I had. So I actually went back, killed a level 3 mob, and ended up getting a new piece of gear that I actually used.
Yeah.
When I was, in my 20s.
And that's not to say that the loot tables are skewed if you go back to a new area. Like, you're still getting...
No, it was just luck of the draw.
Yeah, it was just luck of the draw. But, you get fully level-appropriate gear. It's amazing. It's a fantastic system. And I hope that the people complaining about it just shut the hell up. Honestly, that's where I'm coming at this from. Fuck you guys. No, it's awesome.
you don't understand. They're not going to be happy unless it's exactly like World of Warcraft.
Oh, man. But so, wait, who are we talking about? So we're talking about Noob and Ascalon Catacombs before going. So you end up never actually getting... Did you? What was the highest level content you experienced, Noob? Like, if you couldn't get into Ascalon?
Level 35 content.
And was there any, large dynamic events you got to experience? Or was it a big letdown at the end, to be honest?
Honestly, I was just walking around trying to level for Ascalon Catacombs. And they're like, nope, fuck you, Nooborama. You don't get to play
Ascalon Catacombs. Ouch, dude. Sucks.
And I'm like... So I'm finding a list of developers so I can send them a little present.
Oh god! All right. So was this an issue other people had? Like, did you check the forums and stuff to see if anyone else found a hotfix or anything like that? Or
I probably should have done that, but no.
But yeah, well, you tried it too.
There's official beta forums.
Right.
Yes.
I didn't know that there were official beta.
Wait, are you being sarcastic?
No, he's being sarcastic.
Okay.
I know that they exist. I just never fucking use them.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Exactly. And most people don't, to be honest.
I feel like I was gonna say something really important about. Wait, I'm trying to think.
I did submit them a bug report.
Yeah, I submitted multiple bug reports.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
One of the
check
bugs
is in the mail for you.
One
guys.
Of the bugs I submitted. Let me go ahead and try to see if I can pull it up for you. Here we go. I filed it under PvE and
this is
other.
Not interesting radio.
my subject for the bug
I think
was
it's about
this
to be interesting.
My subject for the bug was this game is fun to play. body is as follows. There is a game-shattering bug in place where now where no matter what I do, Guild Wars 2 manages to be a fun and an enjoyable experience. For an MMORPG, this will obviously not do at all. This bug can be replicated routinely by playing the game, wherein I find new enjoyable things to do as I play. Clearly, something must be wrong. I believe the game is missing tedious, dumb, unfun bullshit to drag it down. And I submitted that.
Aww.
That's a pretty good
response. I really hope you get a response.
Yeah. Not gotten a response, unfortunately.
That's disappointing.
So we'll move on from new because it's a huge downer, man. That was a huge downer.
Well, fuck
I'm
you,
sorry.
ArenaNet. Fuck you, too. I hate
depressing
you, too.
So, Rawson, what'd you do during the beta? What'd you play?
Yeah, dude, you're not even... You're, like, the most incognito person. You weren't even in our guild until... And then we just never saw you on.
Because he has a second guild. Like, he has, like,
yeah,
other
but
people.
He was just
with.
Never online, for that matter. Like,
I was there.
He was online. I saw him online. Oh. But he wasn't representing us, so he had a little bar across his name.
Loser.
Anyway. So what'd you do?
Well, I mostly, I'm kind of, my main thing is I want to get to know the classes.
Right.
So I can kind of pick which one I would want to play.
In PvE sense or a PvP sense?
What?
Like in a PvE context or a PvP context?
Both, ideally. Okay.
So, but you mainly play PvE, was it?
Yeah, PvE and World v. World.
Okay.
I'd say probably more PvE, but whatever.
Because you went there for our past, like last time we did a beta event, Impressions Cast, we kind of all gave a general impression of what we played and how we liked the classes. So what was your first class and what classes did you play and how do you like them in general?
Well, my first class that I played to any extent was Elementalist.
Okay.
And this time
so you started with the Showstopper.
What?
You started with the Showstopper.
Not really, actually.
Really?
I enjoyed playing Mesmer more.
Yes, wow. Yes. Okay. So what do you like and not like about Elementalist, for example?
Well, Elementalist is a very straightforward class, and that's largely my problem with
okay.
it. It's like I know what I'm going to get from an Elementalist. With a Mesmer, though, I have so many like random weird tricks up my sleeve. It's basically a class if you're like me and you just want to be a douchebag to people.
You ought to check out, or you said you checked out the Necromancer too, right?
I played Necromancer for a little bit. I didn't really
right.
get a good feel of
no,
it.
But
Necromancer
like,
definitely has that same feel as well with some of the weapons.
They fixed the Mesmer
okay.
from
Mesmer's
the original
have a long
Guild
history
Wars.
Of being dicks.
Like,
what do you
Mesmer,
mean they fixed the Mesmer?
Because the hexes always made me so mad. I
so
remember
good.
I took my keyboard
those
and smashed
diversion.
It on the floor because I was trying to do a run.
So
and then
good.
Those fucking gargoyles.
Playing Mesmer was that. One of the. My favorite experiences from the original Guild Wars because fucking with
they
people
were the prettiest.
Is the MO for the class. Like it's a class about
someone's videos. Infuse and HA is just.
God, I hate you. I hate you, Cynic.
Exactly, because it is the class for people who like to troll other players.
Basically, yeah,
but
just troll
within
everyone.
The context of the game. Like it's
no,
class,
the best trick for trolling is like in the original Guild Wars. You play a Necromancer in random arena. And then you'd use Aura of the Lich and then kill yourself. And then kill your entire and they'd be like,
I was
going to
say that the best
you?
Method for trolling people was probably Echo Blackout. Oh my god. If anyone doesn't know what that means, is Blackout was a skill that literally disabled everything in your character and drained you of all adrenaline, which is one of the like key warrior mechanics in the first Guild Wars. And you can use another skill called Echo, so you have two blackouts on your skill bar, so you just walk up to people, blackout, and then blackout them again. And it was... 10 seconds of complete shutdown, only possible if you're playing, I think, pretty much only possible.
Well, what's the point of trolling people you're fighting against? The point is to troll people on your team.
So
that's how the Lich works.
Yeah, you go into RA as a monk, and everyone's like, yes, we got a monk. They don't realize you're running all Smite.
So what do you like about Mesmer? What did you play? What weapons did you use as Mesmer, Rossum?
For the most part, I used a staff in PvP because, for those of you who don't know, the staff is primarily based around giving conditions to the enemy player, and which are basically the equivalent, I guess, of debuffs and dots and things like that.
Yeah,
that's kind of the catch-all term for what you do. Anyway, yeah, I mostly did that as in PvP, which was awesome because basically I got to fuck with people and just wear them down. And that was pretty much my strategy, and it worked beautifully. I very rarely died. In PvE, I actually would start to use a great sword a bit, which was kind of interesting. Unlike what you would imagine, the great sword actually is ranged.
Yeah, it's such a cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, your primary ability is literally to shoot purple lightning out of the sword.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It does more
cool.
damage like the further you are from your target, which is pretty awesome.
It's like a longbow. It's pretty amazing.
And there's other things, like you can throw like an illusionary sword at people and it creates the little illusions and copies.
Yeah,
of
so
you.
What do you feel about the core mechanic of the Mesmer? There's the Mesmer in Guild Wars 1 was a hex-based class, and that was essentially a type of debuff in Guild Wars 1, which was person-targeted and usually quite powerful. But in Guild Wars 2, they've taken out like individual person-targeting. So everything is essentially area of effects and stuff like that. But the way they made Mesmer work was instead of doing something particularly to another player, what they do is they essentially generate images of themselves, like ways to confuse other people within the context of the game. It's a really interesting system, but one I never really got.
It doesn't work.
It totally works.
Yeah,
it totally works.
I didn't feel it was all that great.
Well, it never confuses anyone.
Thing.
I mean,
oh, it totally worked. No, it totally did. Yep.
I found myself like attacking like copies in like World v. World in like a big fight. I would totally find myself fighting. Like,
well,
eventually.
Didn't they not yet fix the thing where the mirrors don't have the icon thing above their heads?
Yeah, they don't say the class. Like, a person normally walking around in PvP, they have their class above their head, and the
so
Mesmer.
If you see it without that, you know that that's a copy.
Yeah, but as Shinboy said, like in larger fights in War vs. World, like you just can't keep track of everything that's going on, and frequently.
Yeah, you're mostly just tab targeting at that point.
Yeah, and frequently, or just like mashing, clicking the middle of your screen and hitting your buttons. You're not mashing.
Just don't
your buttons.
Play World vs. World.
You really do. Play World vs. World with skill. I'm not saying that. I'm saying targeting World vs. World can be a bit difficult because there's so many people on screen. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, you don't mash in Guild Wars 2. Don't mash. Anyway.
No.
But Mesmer's skill in large groups is a terrifying thing because like they can literally just fill your shit with chaff. And not only that, but when you kill one of their illusions, frequently there's like subsequent effects. Like you can apply conditions that cripple, not cripple, like blind, stuff like that. That really
Oh, cripple is one of the conditions.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah, there's been times where I used one of the staff skills, which is to drop like an AoE thing that does okay damage, but the most important thing it does is it just goes condition.
Yeah.
And someone's trying to run away, and I just plop that down right in their path, and it's pretty much over.
Wow. Yeah, that was Chaos... something. Chaos Storm. Chaos Storm, yeah. It's a really good skill. Yeah. And if you fire through it with like a ranged weapon, then the bullets are applied like a random condition to those as well. I think. Not a random...
Oh,
I think
cool.
They actually set the condition now. I think it applies a specific condition now. But before it was like a random condition. So you can pile on like a bajillion conditions and debuffs on people by firing through a Chaos Storm. But yeah, aside from that, like in structured PvP, I can't believe we're skipping three topics here, but it's oppressions cast, so get used to it. Instructions PvP...
Wow, what a dick.
Yeah, I know. If you're trying to capture a point, and I was a solo warrior, like I generally played it as a solo rifle warrior, surprised anyone who knows rifle warriors, but they're still pretty awesome in structured PvP. Like, they've nerfed them, but they're still amazing. I would walk up to a point, I'd see this massive crowd on my minimap, of people walking my direction, or if I like look around the corner, I see this huge crowd of people coming towards me, I'd freak out and leave, right? But like once or twice, it was just like a mesmer rolling with its illusions. It was like really cool to see that I was like legitimately tricked by some people playing mesmer. I thought it was actually a pretty cool mechanic. What was it, Shinboy? Did you play much in the way of mesmer?
I played it a while ago. Like, I totally did not play it in the press beta. I don't know what you guys are talking about. But that's the only time I really played it. I messed around with it up to, like, level 8 very far.
Right. But, yeah, back to Rawson. So, you didn't like... So, do you say Elementalist, you'd say it was a bit too obvious and direct for you?
Yeah, like I know exactly what I'm going to get from an Elementalist.
Right.
You probably know what you're going to get from Elementalist.
Oh yeah.
Like with a mesmer, there's a lot of mixing stuff up, and I like that.
Nice. And so you generally played with the greatsword and staff. Did you try the other weapons? Did you try like the sword?
Oh yeah, I tried all the weapons.
And those are the ones that you generally felt were more to your style of play.
Yeah.
This is kind of cool because I found that with Warrior, people tend to gravitate towards very specific weapons. Actually, no. That's a lie. I'm thinking back to it because if you ask a Warrior what he plays, you'd get some people say double swords, some people say double axes, some people say sword axe, some people sword and warhorn, some people great sword, some people rifle. But you literally have a situation where Guild Wars 2 has pretty much nailed the weapon balance to such an extent that people actually are finding things that suit them, like how they want to play. What does anyone else think about the topic?
Either that, or no one has figured out which one is most OP yet.
Well, yeah, that.
That's also probably true.
Way to bring me down. Way to bring me down.
Just being a realist.
But yeah, at the moment at least, it's a really fun dynamic where everyone's finding stuff for them.
I don't know, I haven't seen a Necro that doesn't use a staff.
That's true. I think Necro's skills in general, and we touched on this last broadcast, but I'm just not feeling... Like, I like Necro, don't get me wrong, but I mean, I don't think the skill balance between weapons and between utility skills is quite there yet. I don't think they've found a way to make, for example, the daggers feel as awesome as the axe, if you want to play a melee Necro.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's just things, the slight things missing in unbalance in the Necro class, in my opinion. But back to Rawson, so what do you actually play? What do you actually play this weekend?
I thought I just told you.
No, I mean, like, what stuff do you play
with? Basically, I took a charm mesmer up until from like level 1 to I think level 20, maybe, was like by the time I finished.
Okay.
And that was a lot of fun.
So mainly the char starting area, or did you switch between starting areas?
I mostly just did the char starting area. I went back to the human starting area to play with friends, which was fucking great, but we've already been over why that's great,
yeah.
So I'm not going to get into that. Yeah, and I enjoyed it a lot, and I also really enjoyed doing the World v. World as part of the live stream.
Oh,
and
yeah.
In there, I also used the staff greatsword combo.
Right, as your mesmer.
yeah, but when I went back to my primary server, sorry, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
My roles were reversed in World v. World. I was no longer the server that was top dog.
Right. I
was one of the smaller ones, and that is not as fun.
So, because when we start talking about World v. World, this podcast is going to be pretty much World v. World for the rest of it. Do you want to start that now? We probably should look into a bit more into PvP.
Not
PvP.
Yet.
Yeah, we go a bit more into PvP before jumping into World v. World. Because I think we all played World v. World, so... what did you most like? What parts of the char starting area did you really find fun? Do you see anything that you really liked?
Just a lot of the overall aesthetic I really enjoyed.
Oh, really? Okay.
Some of the events were pretty interesting. Like, there's one that involves defending like some mortar emplacements from harpies, and another one that involves like a influx of earth golems getting up near a graveyard.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. I think there was one when I was traversing through there with my human, because the starting area, char area, is like really huge. It goes
from the city
west, like a good, no, sorry, east, about like a good 20 minute walk just from the city to the edge of their area. It's kind of nuts.
And I cleared out the Ascalon wall of harpies.
Oh man,
it's part of it.
Everything to do with Ascalon and the Char starting area, I've just got my veins. Oh, I was essentially having the equivalent of a hard on. I had the equivalent of a hard on.
You're the bad guys.
and I'm killing the good guys. I'm killing ghosts of the good guys. And the way they executed the Great Northern Wall, I think it is, which is running on the top of that area, with the different lighting effects and like how everything goes suddenly like gloomy, and you can see the ruins of the Great Northern Wall and the ruins of Ascalon City and stuff. It's absolutely spectacular, the Char starting area. I went into it not liking the Char starting area too much because I don't really like the whole brown metal grungy kind of aesthetic, but it does really vary up as you walk around, and the water area is actually pretty spectacular. What are your thoughts about the actual area itself? Did you play much of the Char starting area last beta, or this is your first time in the Char starting area?
This is really my first time actually getting into it. It's, like I said, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the aesthetic. I'd probably say the human starting area is more pretty.
Yeah. Well, that's without a doubt, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I can't really say whether or not I think it's like more fun.
Right.
I'll say something about the Char areas. Like, I hated the Char starter area.
Really?
But I loved the Char second area.
Wow. Okay. Like
the 15 to 25. I thought it was great.
Cool.
I thought it was great. The events there were interesting. It looked cool. I don't know. I enjoyed it a lot more.
What did you not like about the Char starting area? I think Noob's talking to his parents. Wow.
I didn't think anything in there was like overly interesting.
Okay.
Like event wise,
there were some cool things happening there because for some areas the like Char starting area did this more than other areas in my opinion. Like obviously there's areas in the human starting area where a waypoint would be contested in a town because it kept getting attacked by centaurs. That happened quite a lot.
Yeah.
But in the Char starting area, I felt that they did it a little bit more naturally and dynamically. Like, for example, there's a waypoint in the far eastern side of the Char starting area. I've forgotten what its name is, but it gets attacked by, like, these giants. They're not Ettins, but, like, giant-y kind of things. And that would be an actual event chain. And the event chain isn't just, hey, they're attacking this area. Hey, it's being contested. Maybe you want to walk 10 minutes to get there and maybe help them out. It's more like it's a slow degradation of there's this outpost in the middle of nowhere. And there's this another like a base camp of these giants. And there'd be like an event which is more like the relations are getting a bit strained. So they've started like making small raids, making small inroads to where you are. And eventually gets to the point where you get overrun by them, that they decide to make a full-scale assault on you, and the closest waypoints are, as I said, about 5 to 10 minutes walk away, so there'd be like a large multi-stage assault and pushback over that point, and I felt it was far better done in the Char starting area with those giants than it ever was in the human starting area with the centaurs. I thought the centaur thing in the human starting area was absolute BS until you get to around Kessex Hills. Kessex Hills was awesome, and I'll get there when I do my impressions, but like I found some parts of the Char starting area a bit boring, like stuff like helping them out with their little like pickup quests, like you go to a heart quest and all this, yeah. Like, picking up shells and stuff and bringing them back to camp, like that kind of stuff was a bit boring. Rosson, did you do too much in the way of the renown quests in renown events in the Char starting area?
No, not really.
Okay.
Sorry.
You generally did like the dynamic events instead, right?
Yeah.
And you did the right way. In my opinion, that's probably why you have such a positive review of the Char starting area, because a lot of those renown quests are a bit repetitive and boring, in my opinion.
Yeah, because I like doing the renown quests just to see what the vendor has.
Yeah.
So that's mostly what I did.
Exactly. And it kind of like down, it's a pretty much a huge down on the entire area, because again, yeah, a lot of those like fetch quests or just like hold this point against like a constant assault by enemies, stuff like that, which is fun, I guess, but when you've done it so many times in the human area and the Norn area, doing it again, the Char area kind of gets a bit grating. But I find a lot of the dynamic events pretty awesome in the Char starting area.
Yeah, I like the ones in the second area.
Right. So, Rawson, did you get to the second area? We'll get to Shinboy in a second, but did you get to the second
area? No, actually, I didn't get to go to the second area. Okay. For the most part, like, my playstyle for the betas seems to be basically just let it go. Just let myself go with it. Just right. Let everything flow as I feel like it. And for the most part, that's how it works out, and that seems to be working out great.
Cool.
Because I don't care enough to level up in the most efficient way possible for a beta where my character is going to be wiped
anyway, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like for the most part in MMOs, I don't give a shit about that.
Right. So we'll move on then. Shinboy, because we'll do World vs. World at the end. What'd you do this beta? Did you have fun? What'd you play?
I played a thief, well, the thief that I'm was continuing from the last weekend. This was like last beta weekend, I just sort of just did whatever, just trying to see what everything was. You know, first time playing a game, you're trying to figure out all the different systems. This weekend, I was like, you know what? I'm going to play this as if the game's already out, and I'm just going to, like, hardcore
Ooh, that's
as
dangerous.
If I was actually playing.
That's dangerous.
Just to see what it's like, see if I would actually enjoy it. Because, you know, I was like, okay, getting all of this magic of discovery out of the window, I'm going to sit down and play this game.
And that's the dangerous part, which I was referring to. It's not that the game would not meet expectations. It's that it totally meets expectations, and you totally get drawn in. Like, I lost a day of my weekend by doing what you just said to do.
I was surprised. Like, I actually went in saying, like, okay, I'm going to play this as if this game is out and I'm playing instead of just seeing how everything works for the first time. And I still ended up just wandering around.
Yeah.
Just finding things to do.
Exactly.
Like, me and someone else from Guild, I don't have a screenshot of it to see who it was, but we were in the Char second area, which I enjoyed so much.
So, so is it the Eva Char, or was it a different race?
No, Norn.
Okay, so you're checking out a new area.
I wasn't a fan. I wasn't a fan of the Norn second area, so I went to the Char.
I agree with you. I think the Norn second area is a bit boring.
It's like all the same.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like the Char first area.
So, you know, one thing I'm noticing about this game I didn't realize I missed until I had it is the ability to, you know, say, like, I don't really like this area, so I'm going to go over to this other area and quest here instead.
Oh, yeah.
That's been missing from so many recent MMOs. They're so linear these days.
Yeah.
There was this one path, and that's where you must go if you are within this level range.
I totally forgot.
This is the level 15 to level 25 planet. You will go to the level 15 to 25 planet. You will hit level 25.
I'm not calling out any names of MMOs or anything.
A quest will tell you then to go to the level 25 to 40 planet.
Oh,
then proceed to the level 25 to 40 planet.
Yeah.
I totally forgot this is a thing.
Kill yourself.
In Guild Wars 2, right, so you start in your normal starting area for your class and your race, sorry. So you start in Norn, you're in the Norn starting area. You generally stick to that for a couple of levels just to familiarize yourself with the game. But then you realize that if you hit the map button, there's an outpost called Lion's Arch. I'm not sure if this will be available when the actual game comes out. I don't know if this is the case. But if you go to Holbrek or any major starting city, there's a Asura's teleporter there that takes you to Lion's Arch. And when you get there, you can actually use another teleporter, because there's a circle of teleporters right next to each other in the city, to get to any of the other starting areas.
I imagine that will be in the game, because that's really the only way to get to those other zones.
Yeah.
No, you can straight up walk to them.
Well, I mean,
but
I'm thinking,
area.
If you're wanting to go from second area of human to the second area of the Norn, that's the only realistic way to do it is to use those portals. You're not really
ones that aren't linked by landmass. Yeah. Because between human and Norn, you have all the Lion's Arch area from memory, I think.
Well, and not just that, but I'm thinking, like, you know, having to go through zones that are clearly above your level in order to get there.
Yeah.
So this makes it much easier, and I imagine...
So I hope they leave it in the game. Bringing it back to it, like, it's amazing because you can straight up go, as they said, hey, I've done a couple of levels for this area, let's have a look at what the other starting areas are, and just hit Lion's Arch, teleport to the next major city, and straight up quest as if you would normally, and do dynamic events and all other stuff. Like, it's a really cool concept, and I didn't even realize when doing it, because it felt so natural. This is pretty new to MMOs. Like, for example, Rawson, what's your experience from, I think you were pulling examples from Star Wars, was it?
Well, specifically Star Wars, the whole planet thing, but even though I never bought Star Wars The Old Republic. I played the beta. I thought it was fucking garbage. But enough of that. It was fucking garbage.
Right.
I agree. I did the same thing.
But, I also played Ion, and that was also fucking garbage.
That game's awesome.
No, I'm sorry, it wasn't. But it did the similar thing with the whole, like, you know, here is your one zone. This is where you get to go.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you, and if I can you confirm, want to do anything,
yeah, and
if
I
you want to do anything else, fuck off.
And I can confirm, as somebody who pretty much buys every major MMO that releases, they're all that way.
Wow, okay.
The last game, the last MMO that I played where you actually had real choice of which zone you wanted to play in, was probably WoW.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
That's the saddest thing.
Yeah.
Wait, so does WoW have a similar... I hate to do this because, I appear to be the MMO noob here, but I only played a couple hours of WoW, and that was just the starting area, I think it was.
In WoW, it's kind of similar to that, where, like, if you are, say, playing as, like, a Night Elf, there is kind of a path that quest takes you through.
Right.
But those zones don't really come into the other ones for quite a while, same as if you're playing as a human. You're going to be starting off in Elwynn Forest and moving out from there to Westfall and moving from there and so forth. But, like, if I was playing as, say, a dwarf and the dwarf starting area is fucking terrible, I could just go and run. And granted, it's harder. There aren't the portals that there are in Guild Wars 2.
Oh, right. Okay.
But I could run myself to one of the other starting zones and go fight there instead.
You feel about the easiness and, like, how it works in Guild Wars 2 to get between starting areas, Duren?
As somebody who tends to not like MMOs with loading screens and instances and stuff, I am surprisingly okay of how it's done, because the world is kind of broken up. I mean, you can run from one place to another, but there are definitely some places that you can only really reach through a loading screen, it seems like.
Right.
But the way the game handles it is still okay, because the majority of the world really is kind of there. It is open. There isn't a load screen from, the first area right outside Divinity's Reach to Keswick Hills, for instance. Like, it's all one big landmass.
I think there's a loading
area. We're on the topic of load screens...
No, there's not a loading area.
While we're on the topic of load screens, am I the only one that's really upset they took the progress bar out of the loading screen?
Yes. No, sorry, you're not the only one who's upset of that.
I agree.
It doesn't tell me how long it's been loading. It's... circle
exactly.
Going round and round.
Yeah, it's just a circle going round and round, and you're just sitting there. Loading zones being longer this time through?
They were.
Yeah, the game was
faster. They also said on Twitter that people were hanging on loading screens a lot.
Yeah, because the game ran better, but I found that I loaded areas for longer. Those could be directly correlating. Like, they could just be putting more RAM or whatever it is. But yeah, it's weird. But yes, aside from that, the loading screens are pretty, and we'll get back to the point here. WoW, you can get between starting areas from any really easily as any character. You can experience all the starting areas and have fun because of that level scaling thing. You'll still be leveling up. You'll still be getting XP and loot for your character and appropriate to your current actual level. But you can be experiencing lower level content being scaled down. It's a pretty amazing system, and one that pretty much... it reinforces, as I said earlier, that you can choose how you want to play. So back to
not just starter areas, like all level ranges.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like I was I finally found a screenshot of it. I'm level 22 in the char, like 20, like 15 to 25 area as a Norn. So it doesn't apply to just starter areas.
Cool. Yeah, exactly. Any starter, any area of the game. Yeah. You can.
I'm pretty sure I found an instance here. That's what the screenshot is, because me and someone else, like, we went up to this. There's like in the char 15 to 25 area. I don't remember where it was exactly on the map, but it's near, like, a river. It looks like north.
Right.
But there's, like, a giant pool with, like, a ramp going around each side to the far side of the pool, where there's, like, a jet going into the pool, and, like, this big sculpture with a whole bunch of horns. There's a gate with an NPC in front of it.
Oh, cool.
And they wouldn't let us inside, so I think that might
Another
be,
dungeon.
Like, a level 20 instance.
Yeah, a dungeon, yeah. I think we found a couple. I think there was a level 40 dungeon. Well, the only reason I'm saying that is because it was a little in level 15 area. I'm talking about just outside Divinity's Reach. There's a near Beetleton. There, or maybe in Beetleton.
In the town there.
Yeah, there's a town there, and there's an NPC in front of a teleporter to a dungeon, like what's clearly going to be a dungeon. But she's level 40, so it might actually be a level 40 dungeon. There's quite a few blocked off areas. Because
I found a level 70 one.
Wow.
Like in the last beta.
Okay, cool.
It was in the Norn 15 to 25 area in the top right corner.
Yeah.
Which I guess would be northeast, there's like a little tunnel system.
Right.
If you make it to the back, There's like two level 70 NPCs there.
Whoa, okay.
In Portal.
Yeah, because, well, to break it down for you, because we just discussed how easy it is to get between places in Guild Wars 2. But the thing is, the teleporters in Lion's Arch and how you, the main way to get between starter areas and general like areas in Guild Wars 2, it takes you to the main city of the place you're going. So, again, if I'm a level 22 human and I want to check out the star starting area, I go to Divinity's Reach, which is my home city. I take the teleporter to Lion's Arch, and then I take the Lion's Arch teleporter to Holbrecht. And Holbrecht is the northern starting city, or in the case of the Char, I take it to the Black Citadel, which is the Char starting city. So the reason that I think that these dungeons are in very low-level areas, so for example, level 25 areas for the level 70 dungeon and a level 40 area, 15 area for the level 40 dungeon I found at Beetleton, the reason for that is they don't want you to have to trek large distances to play with your friends. They want you to be able
That's a good point. Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
Exactly. So they want you to be able to, like, for example, if you're a level 80 character but you've never been to Beetleton before, they want you to be able to go to Divinity's Reach and maybe at like a 20 to 30 minute trek maximum to get to the next dungeon that you might want to play with your friends. It's kind of cool. I like the idea, but it is kind of jarring seeing a level 70 NPC and going, oh, okay, this is going to be something that's maybe for later.
Yeah.
But so yeah, yeah, but back to your story. So what do you, how do you like the level 25 area? What was it like? What was it about? What did you do there?
There was the main thing. There's like a mill in the center. This is where I spent most of my time.
Right.
And there's like skelk all around it, and one of the events there is to like try and train them and to like kill off the ones like you know, trying to attack the ones that you're trying to train.
Okay.
And then inside the mill you have to like collect wood for the mill and you know, obviously kill off wild creatures and like set traps and all of this other nonsense.
Oh right.
And then I think it was the Flame Legion. They can actually attack the mill.
Okay, cool.
And that's actually really difficult.
All right.
Like, it's probably the most difficult.
Was this a renowned
event.
Area, or was this like just dynamic events that popping off?
The Flame Legion attacking was dynamic, and I believe training the Skelk was dynamic.
Oh, cool. No, that's, so yeah. So you found how many people were you rolling with? Just the other Link Enforcer, or
I was with one Link Enforcer for a while. But a lot of the times there was like no one around. I don't know why. Maybe just people didn't like that area.
Well,
I
think
it was
a case of a lot of people were just like being content tourists this weekend. Like for me, I was level 22 human level, like starting area for Char. I don't think many people did what I did later and went mainlined a single races area, for example, and continue through their like higher level areas. So I don't think many people even got to, for example, Kessex Hills for humans or this area for the Char. Like I just think it's
It's called the Essa Plateau.
I got everywhere.
Yeah,
I got my dirty hands everywhere.
Well, did you like the Essa Plateau, Noob? Did you spend much time there?
Yeah, that's where the underwater dungeon was.
Oh, cool.
Right. I ran across the entrance to that. I didn't go in.
Right. And we've pretty much already gone through. So did you find that if you had to choose between the level 25 areas that you experienced new, which ones would you say that you enjoy the most?
Honestly, I preferred, 25 areas. What's the human 25 areas?
Kessex Hills.
Is Kessex Hills.
That's actually a really good question.
Yeah.
Both of them are really good, but I'd probably... Because I didn't run across like a dungeon kind of thing in Kessex Hills, so I'd probably go with the Char one.
Cool. Yeah, that's good to hear because I really enjoyed Kessex Hills. Which is the human one. Just to round out Shinboy, was there anything else you want of particular note?
Actually,
that you wanna...
But while the thing had the dungeon, Kessex Hills probably had better events, like dynamic events and.
There's a specific one I want to talk about.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
But yeah, anything of note, Shinboy?
No, I did not like the Norn 15 to 25.
I agree.
It was the Snowden Drifts.
I agree.
Like, there's... Especially the one underwater...
I might be remembering this wrong. Is this the one that's... The entrance to it is at the very north of that hilly area right next to the dome of the Svanir? Like, you go right... There's like a... There's Dolyax?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That takes you to... different area. This is on the other side.
Oh, okay. I've never been to this place. Okay, then I don't know. I have no idea where this place is.
It's called Snowden Drifts. When you first walk in, if you're walking in from the east, you walk in, there's a little town with a trade broker or whatever.
Okay.
With a trading post. And yeah, I didn't like it. A lot of the scenery looked the same.
All right.
Not like the Char area where there's a lot of different things going on.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was just, I don't know whether it was the area's fault or just the spawn timer's fault, because it seemed like everything was really close together and everything respawned really fast.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I gotcha.
So you would try and pull, like
very
one...
balanced an area and not fleshed out, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, there is some interesting stuff. Like, there's a cool little town in, like, one of the corners, that there's some interesting events going on there. But other than that, there really wasn't much going on there that I liked. Especially the underwater part was terrible.
Wait, what did you not like about it? Was it just like a...
I think this was the area. There was a renown quest there that was obviously, like, meant to be done by multiple people.
Right.
And there were not multiple people doing it.
Oh, okay, yeah. I got it. I gotcha. So,
but I feel like for the renown quests, you should be able to do them by yourself without much issue.
There's some renown quests that... Actually, let me think. Renown quests. No, you're right. Renown quests are generally stuff that you should be able to do by yourself, even if no one else is around. Dynamic events, some of them I actually think really benefited from being harder and required multiple people being there.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. But you're probably right.
I'd say most dynamic events, I'm sorry, renown quests, you should be able to do by yourself. Just thinking back to the ones I did over the weekend. Because most of them are like collect stuff or kill a certain amount of enemies or help out this area by like moving tools around or stuff like that. So maybe.
And the way that area worked, there was also like a, was it the Qui-Gon? Something?
The Qui-Gon. The Dobu.
Yeah.
The Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah, the Qui-Gon Jinns. the Liam Neesons. Anyway, there was,
I didn't even know why I laughed at that. That wasn't funny at all. Go on.
The game had a bad habit of starting this really, really difficult dynamic event right in the area where you needed to do the renown quest.
Oh, right, gotcha. Yeah.
So it really became impossible, so I just ignored that. I was like level 28, and it's like a level 20 quest, and I just didn't even bother.
Ouch. So if you were to split up your time in percentages, how much time did you spend in PvP versus PvE this weekend?
Structured PvP, I barely touched it.
Right.
I just went in and screwed with builds.
Yeah.
World v. World, maybe like 15 to 20%, then the rest was...
Okay.
Not all PvE, because I did do a lot of crafting.
Right, gotcha.
But we already touched that.
Yeah, we did.
So I would say a little over half.
I guess PvE. I'll move on, and I know that you know I'm going to do this. I guess we'll move on to structured PvP, and we'll eventually move on to what I did this weekend. So, structured PvP, guys.
That's a thing.
That's a thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
And so sad. I think I said this last week on the podcast.
I don't think it's as bad as
it. Is it a thing that people
is.
Will actually care about?
Okay, so...
I'll care about it.
Let's put this down the table. We'll transition from what Jimbo did to what I did, and I'll lay it out for you guys. So... In my beta weekend 2 weeks ago, I was like, okay, this beta, I'm not going to play any PvE. I'm going to spend all my time on PvP. So I'm only going to do World versus World and Structured, and I'm going to try to get a whole day of Structured in so I can definitely lay out my feelings about it. Those are my thoughts going into the weekend, all right? So it ended up pretty well. Like, so for all of Friday, pretty much, and all of Saturday, we did World versus World, which I expected myself to do. Like, I knew I'd do that anyway, right? I love World vs. World. I spent most of the time there, and we'll talk about that later. But for Sunday, I started off the day. I woke up in the morning, had breakfast. I got on Guild Chat, and a couple people were there who were between events at the moment. I said, hey, let's get a group together, and let's start some structured PvP. Let's get this going. I said I'd do this. Let's do it. Let's do it. But the best way we can do it, which is to make a group and to have fun together as a guild, rather than trying out, like, going by myself and maybe not having a perfect experience like I did last weekend, right? So we get in there. It takes about 20 minutes for us to get together, which is fine. Nubarama was there. I was there, and a couple of guys in the guild, Robbie Mack and a couple of others. Sorry if I didn't name you. But so we get in, and there's two NPCs in the mists. So to lay it down for you, just in case anyone out there still doesn't know how it works, you can go into the PvP areas from any level. So as soon as you start the game, after you finish the first dynamic event, so the first story point, from then onwards you're set free. You can visit the world versus world areas or the structured PvP areas by entering this middle land called the Mists, which scales you up to level 80, changes your gear out to level 80 gear, and changes your skills out to like some presets, but you can change it and customize it however you want. So to get to the structured PvP area, all you have to do is make a new character, do that first level of quest, and then go there. So that's what we did. I went there with my Mesmer at first, but then ended up switching over to my Warrior for the actual event because I was more comfortable with that. Rodimac showed up, Nubarama showed up with his Guardian, everyone got together, and we started. Okay, so in this area called the Mists, and there's two NPCs there. One of them is a tournament person, and essentially what you do is one person in your party walks up to him, he initiates the tournament system, and what that does is it prompts that person to elect who in his party would be joining him in the tournament. And so he elects the people, everyone in the party is given a prompt, and they can join essentially a tournament group, and you can start a tournament. Tournaments are automated, so once enough people have elected to start the tournament, it'll immediately banff everyone into the tournament instance, and you can start playing structured PvP. So, were you there with us, Shinpoi, for that, when we did that tournament thing?
No.
Okay.
I wasn't.
So, we get in, right, we talk to that NPC, we start a group, and we're sitting there, I'm going around checking my skills, checking my equipment and stuff. Those guys are pretty happy with what they're rolling with. I'm not sure if actually end up with them being very optimal for the situation. Obviously, it was one of our first times in structured PvP, so everyone was still experimenting. So the first tournament we eventually get into, it took about 10 to 20 minutes to wait for it, which is in itself an issue. But the first tournament we get into, we immediately get stomped. Like, we get absolutely dominated. I think it was like 500...
Maybe shouldn't have been so bad. Maybe that's why you don't like structured PvP, because you're bad at it.
Well, partially, that's true, right? Like, partially, you're right in that, obviously, if we'd done better that first time around the tournament system, we would have had a better time of it, we would have given it more of a chance later on. But straight up, we jumped in, we thought that a bunch of people would be doing tournaments, that's not right, not many people were doing tournaments in general, it took us a long waiting time, we got into a tournament, we got dominated by the only people, other people doing tournaments at the time. It wasn't a great experience. And I'll give you that. I'll say that we weren't prepared for it, we didn't really know what we were getting into. The tournament system works, because it did eventually put us all there, did match us up against other players, it did start a tournament off, but it wasn't fun. It wasn't a situation where I would say, I think we had this discussion in the forums, I'd say it didn't have a good barrier to entry, because my major problem with structured PvP and what I'm slowly transitioning into is it works in that all the mechanics are there. The capture point system works. I will talk about whether we like it or not. Maybe later we might touch on that. I'm not sure. We've done it before.
We touched on that on the PvP episode.
Yeah, exactly. We've all said what we thought about that. But the main thing is, like, everyone has their fully level characters and various degrees of familiarity with that character. So that works mechanically. The tournament system it said works. The catch-up system itself, capturing points and all that stuff feels very good. Feels balanced. Everyone moving around the map felt balanced, and the timings for everything, so the countdown time and all that stuff to get into it is balanced. So mechanically, it's all there, right? But when it actually comes to who you're playing with and playing with other people in a PvP environment, it just didn't gel. And the reason why I think it didn't gel for us was that a very specific issue with structured PvP in Guild Wars 2 is that you don't really know, if you go in by yourself or if you go in with the group, you don't really know who you're playing with and who you're playing against. So what I mean by that is, when you're playing structured PvP in, for example, a first-person shooter, you'd be going in, and in Call of Duty, you'd see ranks next to their name. You'd have a general idea of how everyone's going, what level of experience each person has had. Like, something as simple as that can give you an indication of, A, who you're playing with, and on the opposition side, who you're playing against. So our main problem with jumping into structured PvP in that first time as a group was that we were matched up against people who'd played significantly more than us. Like, the main problem wasn't that we were bad at the game, in my opinion. It was that we straight up, the only people playing at the time was that really hardcore group. And the reason we were raped as hard as we were and were surprised by the fact was we didn't really know going into it that they were the only people playing. Like, it didn't give us a good indication of who else was entering the tournament. It didn't give us a good indication when entering the tournament, like, who they were and how long they'd be playing and how many tournament points, for example, they've had, or how long they'd be playing structured PvP, what their average valor was, for example. None of that was really transmitted to us. So when we got into the second point, was after we got dominated by that, we didn't give up on the spot. We said, hey, let's try out some normal structured PvP ourselves, some non-tournament stuff to see how that goes. So bear with me. I know I'm switching between topics quite often, but stick with me. All right. So we finished that tournament. We walk out. We're feeling dejected. We got absolutely annihilated. We didn't even wait for the second and third rounds. We just kind of quit. Okay. So we get out. We go, hey, let's try some normal structured PvP together. So we're still in the team. We walk over to the other NPC in the mist. So there's two NPCs, one for tournaments, one for actual normal pickup games. And again, I'm met with a situation where things just feel a bit off. So you walk up to him, and how it works is, when you want to join random structured PvP, you have two options. You either go to your character sheet and hit play now, which is essentially a random match, and you teleport into a match, and you just play whoever's there, and you exit whenever you want to exit. Or you can go up to this NPC, and what he does is he presents you a straight-up first-person shooter-style server list.
Server browser, yeah, that's great.
I don't agree. Because literally it's just like get like a list of games, and then you go 16 of 16 people players playing, and so on and so forth, 0 out of 16, and so on and so forth, and you just double-click the one you want to go to, and you enter. What do you feel about that system, Shinboy? Do you like it?
I don't know. I kind of like the server browser. I'm partial to server browsers. Screw your matchmaking.
Yeah, exactly. I felt, well, we'll get to that.
I need a server browser.
Oh my god. So when presented with a server browser, I expect a couple of pieces of information beyond what they give you. So all they really give you there is how many people are currently in that match. What they don't give you is, again, returning to my main topic, they don't give you who the people are. They don't tell you whether they're in guilds. They don't tell you like whether they're playing together as a guild. I mean,
it was the same way in the first game.
Well, right. Like, the problem with doing that is that basically that would allow people who are really good at the game and enjoy trolling people to go in and just destroy people who are clearly not as good at the game as they are, or maybe not as well geared or things like that.
Yeah.
You have to have the anonymity in there for it to make sense.
Well, that's true. But also, if you're the server battle system works if you don't have that situation happening. It works if you have a bunch of people who just want to play together. It doesn't really matter what server you join, but you kind of just want to jump in and have fun, right?
Right, but the problem is what you're asking for is an ideal world that doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. I'm asking for...
Like, the only thing is, with the server browser, can you create a private game? Because that would be the ideal thing.
Exactly. So the first issue we jumped into, what we found out was, when you join an empty game, because again, we didn't have any information about who was there, so we weren't really comfortable about being matchmade against people. Sorry, not matchmade, being put up against people who we weren't familiar with. So we went into an empty match, and we all joined at the same time. So the first thing we discovered was you can't enter structured PvP random matches as a team. You can only go in solo.
Oh, that's kind of lame.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter who initiates the transition, but what happens was a person goes up to the structured PvP NPC, he joins an empty server, and suddenly he goes black. Like, if you're familiar with the interface, on the top left-hand corner of your screen when you're in a party is the other four people in your party. You have their health bars, you have their names, yeah, and stuff like that. He just goes black, which means he's essentially left the same server as you're on. And we're like, what? Okay. And we join the same game as him, and not only did it remove him from our party, not remove him from our party, but like separate him from us entirely and not bring us with him when he entered the game. But when we entered the game, he was on the, like, we were split between the two teams. So
yeah,
we had situations where like three of us were on one team, one of us on the other, two of us on the other, or 4-1, that kind of stuff. And dumber still, right, because we were still in the same party, I could still tell where they were on the map.
That's awesome.
Okay, yeah. That's an issue.
So on multiple cases here.
See, like, I didn't have this. Okay, this is why we have differing opinions on structure, because I pretty much like lone wolfed it the whole time, yeah. So I didn't run into any of these issues.
Exactly. Well, and what I was going to say too, like your issue of like you not being able to queue together or join a server together, or whatever. In this instance, is there going to be some sort of like a rated structured PvP, or is this just the only structured PvP there is?
At the moment, there's just the two. There's tournaments, and then there's random. That's it.
Okay, what I'm thinking is tournaments, basically, I imagine, are their version of rated yeah. structured PvP.
Yeah.
And that's why that's where you can go in as a group
yeah.
and play in there. The non-rated, which would be just the normal structured PvP, in a lot of current MMOs, you cannot group up together. And if you can, like in the instance of like Star Wars, I think you can only group up to like five people or up to four people of the eight that can go in.
Right.
And the idea behind that is that way you can't just go in as a guild and just fucking steamroll the other team because yeah. you have way more, you work together better and you have vent to work with. Like that's why that exists.
Yeah. So I'll concede that. I'll say that, sure, that's fine. But all
yeah, the
these
party
thing—that's
definitely a fuck up.
Yeah, but all of these are suboptimal solutions to a problem that's already been solved, right? So what I'm breaking it down to, and what I'm trying to get to in terms of my point, is that none of the issues I experienced all day with structured PvP, which I had, and I have to say that we stuck with it. We stayed. We eventually used the party switching things between rounds to eventually get to most of the people in the same party. New Barama left. We stuck with it for a couple, like about maybe an hour or two, and played against some random teams as a guild team. We went freaking steamrolling.
I only left
because
you guys were
okay.
terrible. I want to be brought down by you shit.
Let's not get into that.
I told them they were bad.
Oh God.
I'm playing with you guys again. You guys are terrible.
You are so bad at structured PvP. Anyway, so...
You're noob. We're forming a pro team, okay?
It's because
and you people are giving me shit for not playing with you.
So, all of these problems would be solved if they just had teamed, match-made PvP.
Team arenas?
Like
what
team
you're saying
arenas.
Is
skirmish.
Well, they removed that from the first right. game. What the hell?
Well, what you're saying is basically the tournaments then, right?
No. I'm speaking of matchmaking in general. So in structured PvP, currently, like we just showed you the dichotomy between the systems. So you have one which is essentially a serverless, which you jump into a random server and pit against random people. Another which is the tournament system. Both things could be formed into one thing if they just made it fully match-made. Right? So if you're jumping in with a team of people, you'd be match made against people who also jump in with a team of people. Or a group of people who've been with each other for a couple of rounds, who've demonstrated some prowess, you'd be match made against them. Or if you're jumping in alone, you wouldn't
prowess.
Have situations.
What?
Yeah.
I was laughing at that too inside.
Prowess.
What? It's a fancy word, is it?
Prowess.
It's prowess.
Anyway.
At least in the good old US of A,
yeah,
it's prowess.
Yeah,
prowess.
So,
no one says prowess.
Anyway, you wouldn't have situations
apologize.
Where
a
person who hasn't been playing the game for long is match made against people who've been playing for a long time. Like, you wouldn't have that situation, which we first ran into when going in as a team.
Well, I mean,
and
that's what RA was in Guild Wars 1, and no one really seemed to have a problem with
but
RA.
That's a seven-year-old game.
Has a random...
Guild Wars 1's an old
game. Yeah, but I mean,
like... It's fine for it to have those issues,
know.
But in modern...
I think if you're just jumping into, like... by yourself into structured PvP, I have no problem with there being no real like level-based or skill-based matchmaking.
Really? You don't have a problem with that? You don't think it's weird that a person who goes in for the first time to structured PvP can be matchmade, be pitted against people who have been playing for days and days and get absolutely ruffle-stomped and not have
sure.
a fun
the
time?
Only, you know,
because the only reason I see that
whole team. When you're casual.
Yeah, the only reason I see that at all being an issue is if they are truly trying to take this to like an esports level of competitiveness, and then I can see there being some sort of like a matchmaking ladder in there.
No, I disagree. I think matchmaking is a staple of a modern game. I think any modern game which has a structured PvP kind of system, which seriously is people versus people, should have matchmaking. It should.
Yeah, you should be able to play against the person that you actually want to play against.
Yeah, you should be able to have fun. That's what it boils down to. You should be able to enter PvP and have fun. No matter, it doesn't matter who you're playing against. It doesn't matter what's happening in the thing. has to be fun. And people aren't having fun out there. Like, a lot of people, like me, are playing structured PvP for a short period of time and then straight up just giving up on it. Either because, for example,
you're bad.
I entered normal random games for myself and then just fucking dominated. I was the top of the list for multiple games in a row. It wasn't fun because I wasn't being challenged. I changed servers, I did that kind of stuff, but I still just dominate everyone around me. But when I entered a tournament system, as I said, with my guild, then we just got ruffle stomped by people who knew what they were doing. Like, it was a case where I...
The tournaments, I'll give you the matchmaking for the tournaments. That needs to be done.
Yeah. But of course,
but if you're just entering by yourself, I don't think it's
that's the thing. Like, you're saying the matchmaking is a staple of games, and I think what you're calling matchmaking is not matchmaking. What you want is a ladder system. Matchmaking is simply clicking a button and having it throw you into a game.
Yeah.
Well I think a ladder system,
that's not something that exists.
No, I'm talking about matchmaking in the terms of Halo multiplayer. I'm thinking of looking at player skill, looking at player skill. Rating people internally, whether by surfaced statistics or not surfaced statistics. And
again, that's not something that exists in most MMOs. And when it does exist, that is in a separate rated mode.
But why does it have to be rated? Like, it's a single or encompassing system which can solve many issues existing.
Because some people prefer the way that it exists currently. Some people prefer either just basic matchmaking or however they're doing the system. Some people prefer it to be kind of the, you know, matched up against whoever, or they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care. I don't think it's a matter of preference. This,
and then there are people that do care, and that's what the rated versions are generally two systems.
This is stupid. So why are MMOs still like this? Why is this? How have shooters solved the problem? Not really solved it, but have progressed along the line towards solving it. And MMOs are still in this case where people don't really know that there's a better solution out there to PvP.
Wait, what do you want?
Well, because MMOs have been fucking inbreeding for the past over a goddamn decade, and they've stagnated to the point where even the one that comes out...
Shooters have evolved.
Shooters have evolved in notable ways within the last decade or so.
I've never played a console shooter, so I don't know what the fuck matchmaking is like.
So matchmaking
servers. Oh, yeah.
So matchmaking is... When you play...
Hang on. Before you go any further... You are not talking about matchmaking. I'm talking about modern
matchmaking.
Skill matching.
Yeah.
No, you're talking about skill
which
matching.
Which is encompassing skill matching.
Matchmaking is completely different.
Oh, yeah. Modern skill matching and matchmaking are different.
Yeah, matchmaking is simply you finding pressing the button you want to go and play, and it throws you into a game.
That's a randomized player pairing system. That is not modern.
That is called matchmaking.
That is not modern matchmaking. Matchmaking.
That is matchmaking. What you're talking about is
a good.
What you're talking about is a type of matchmaking, using the umbrella term of matchmaking. Can be confusing.
Okay, sure. So this is called skill matching.
Matchmaking system.
So does everyone here know what I mean by skill matching?
Maybe.
Yes.
Okay, so what it is when you play PvP, it tracks statistics about how you play. It's not only what your kill death ratio is, but how long you stay alive, what kind of things you do, what your reaction times are.
In a MOBA.
Something like that. Yeah, and it assigns either a surfaced or non-surfaced statistical level to you. So essentially it says it's the same thing that StarCraft does in surface. Like, obviously they say what they do, but they have Diamond League.
Yeah, it's basically a ladder system, whether it be something shown to the player or not.
Exactly. So they actually show you to the player, they tell you what league you are and that kind of stuff. That's a skill matching system, which essentially says, hey, by looking at the statistics about how you play and how you've done, this is how good you are, and we'll pair you against people who have the same relative level of skill or have demonstrated that they are generally around the same level of skill as you or slightly above you or maybe only slightly below you, right? So that's a system where no matter what level you go in, I mean, how many people you go into the match with, you'd have a situation where you'd be paired against people who are doing the same thing because actually the statistically tracking who you are, how you play, how good you are, and putting you against people who it thinks are appropriate for you. So if you're entering PvP, structured PvP the first time, and a good skill matching system is implemented in the game, that doesn't matter if you go in alone, it doesn't matter if you go in as a team, you'll always have fun because you're always playing against people who won't ruffle stomp you.
I think that's where the problem is that, again, like what you're asking for is called rated whatever the game calls it in any other game. Like in WoW, it's called rated battlegrounds.
Right.
That exists as that. But then separately of that, there is just plain old battlegrounds, and that's where you just queue up and you just go in against random people.
But why is there a difference?
Because that's the more popular option. The people who go into the
more
rated
popular
stuff,
option because rated sounds scary.
The people who go into the rated stuff, those are the ones who go in together as a group. They're serious about the
right. Yeah, exactly. Rated means serious, right? When you see the word rated, you see the word tournament. All these means serious players doing serious things with PvP. But there's no reason for that to be the case. Like, you could just call it PvP and go
because
join
the
match.
No, it shouldn't
because
have...
that's the audience that that brings.
No, because
it's not an industry standard. That's the audience that brings.
Right. But it doesn't
people
matter
who actually care about PvP, and that is why they play whatever the MMO is.
But it doesn't matter
they
because
gravitate
they would
the
be
rated
skill
stuff.
Matched against people who are also doing the same thing. But you wouldn't have the case like you have now of someone who isn't very experienced skill matched against them. Like, that would never happen if you have a skill matching system. Like, everyone could have one umbrella of PvP and all get what they want from it because you are.
It's the same reason. It's the same reason why in StarCraft the option exists
for a custom
to go
game.
In and just play random games against people. You have to have that option because some people aren't like
I don't
you,
wanna
and some people do like randomly playing against other people. So what's missing from Guild Wars, if anything is missing at all, is some sort of a rated option like that where you can queue as a group and you can go in there and it matches you against people who are of similar skill level. And I would agree that maybe that is missing. I thought that's what the tournament system was.
The tournament system, I think what it did was not many people were doing tournaments, so it put us against those guys because those are the only other guys who are doing tournaments at the time. I'm not certain if they put in any form of skill matching in the tournament system.
It sounds like that's what the tournament system is supposed to be, considering what you're doing is essentially the same as structured PvP, right? It's the same maps and everything?
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds like that's basically their version of rated battlegrounds. Is the tournament system where you can go in, you can queue up as a group. I imagine there's probably some kind of stat tracking. I would hope.
Yeah, that's probably. We don't know.
The separate existence of just plain old structured PvP that exists for a reason. It exists because there are people that.
I think it's dumb that people.
Well, the vast majority of people who play.
Because they've been trained to want that.
People who play casual PvP, they want
that. People have moved from having bad experiences but jumping into rated PvP. And that's why this current populace exists of people who actively aren't looking for a structured kind of match-made system, a skill-based system.
No, because that's the thing, is that the non-skill-based match-made system came after – the skill-based match-made system came after the fact. The non-one is what people have been playing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they enjoy.
I think it's a really bad thing that that's the case. I think – if they had an umbrella system.
But the problem is that if you as a game developer have a style in the game that people enjoy, where does it make any sense at all to cut that? Just because you may think
differently. Oh yeah, like Guild Wars 2 has done everything like every other MMO has done.
But I'm saying though that in
Guys,
terms
this
of
podcast is getting serious right now.
In terms of PvP, thanks. Like that's something you want to include in there.
Yeah, why do we need?
Why would you cut it just for the sake of cutting it?
Because they're not cutting it for the sake of cutting it. Because you are having a situation where people are walking in by themselves and getting dominated because they happen to jump in the same server as
PvP.
And then if they don't want to do that, they have the tournament mode.
Right.
But tournament
there are the two options.
For one,
why,
we haven't established whether tournament
better?
Mode does skill matching. We are not sure, right?
It should.
We don't know the code.
It seems like that's what that is. Because, again, this is something that every MMO seems to be launching with now, is a non-rated and a rated Battlegrounds, with the exception of Star Wars, who is putting the rated stuff in.
I'm just going to put an end to this conversation because we are getting a bit too inside baseball here. But I, as my personal opinion, think they should just have an umbrella system. People just match made against people of equivalent skill, and no, it's never surfaced. It should never be called rated system because it's scary. It's a scary term.
And my argument against that is why would you take away options to the player?
Right. Why only
because
have one
people
when
are
you can
would
have
literally
two.
Have a better time of it
because well,
you
don't why, need to be
says
why can't
you
have two? Why do
says,
you always
says
have
you
that
because
one?
That is your playstyle. But there are other people that do enjoy that playstyle. Well, why take that
people
away
like
from them?
Suddenly being finding someone who's much better than them, or suddenly being able to pwn someone who's much worse than them? Like that's a thing people like doing.
There's a reason why the rated stuff exists, and it's because there are those people that like to just fucking destroy people who are way worse than them, and that gets them away from there as much as they can, because then they can go in here and they can do this stuff instead.
Yeah.
Or that specifically gets the people who don't want to deal with that to go and do the rated stuff because they know they're going to be playing against people that are more of their skill level. Like, you have to have those two.
Why do you have to only have one when you can just have two? I don't understand why it detracts from the game having two options rather than
because
one.
At the moment, most people are playing the one which doesn't have any form of rating. That's the current problem.
Because you can also because you can join that one by yourself. You don't need a team.
So there isn't a system which has that's true as well. There isn't a system which a single person can go into a rating system. There isn't a person
you can't go into a tournament by yourself.
No.
Well, they can fix
You're completely incapable.
Yeah, you wouldn't make sense. You have to enter as a team.
That makes sense to me.
It makes sense.
I mean, it makes sense, given that it's calling it a tournament.
Yeah, it's a tournament system. The people who, like me, want to be skill matched against people, but don't want to go in with a team or don't have the team available to me, are getting screwed at the moment.
Yeah, I think that should be in there, but I think I don't think you should put that in there by eliminating the other random systems.
Yeah, I'll concede that maybe people just like ruffle stomping and being ruffle stomped.
I think I think you had a bad experience with the tournament because no one else is playing against the other people.
I also feel like it's too early to say that everybody is doing this way or nobody is doing this. Like we've had two beta weekends.
Yeah, exactly.
Making that broad of a statement, I think it's a little bit early.
I think the statement is valid for the beta, but not valid for release. Because in both beta weekends, it was the case that almost everyone did the randomized version, and very few. Oh, this one was the first one with the tournament system, right?
Because I think with the random, people just want to go, okay, let's see what this is all about. Yeah. So they just go in as soon as they can.
And a lot of people are still bad at their characters. They still don't understand really the intricacies of them.
Yeah.
Like, let's revisit this maybe a few months
after. And that's my stance after the second beta weekend, even though I gave it an honest to goodness shot. Of liking structured PvP, my stance at the end fuck that noise. Until either something's fixed or the game's released and I have a better idea of how it's going to go down, fuck it. I'm not going to touch it again. It's not for me.
My final say with structured PvP is, even though the systems around it may not be the best, I thought the PvP itself was pretty fun.
I thought it was okay. Capture point is still not my thing.
I thought doing that by myself was more fun than doing World v. World.
I would probably agree with that. A great time to transition.
I love World v. World, but
it's a great time to transition.
In fact, I like doing that by myself than trying to play World v. World with anyone.
Sorry, what was that?
I prefer the structured PvP over World versus World.
Really?
Can we cover World v. World in like 15 minutes?
Yeah, oh, that's a good point. What are we at now? We're at 2 hours and 45?
We're at like 2.5 hours.
Yeah. All right. Oh, that's so selling it short. How about we just do it in its own podcast? How about we do it next week?
We'll just save World of the Week.
Because there's no beta this weekend, so we can just...
We'll do a couple weeks of impressions. So what I'll do is I'll say what PvE I did. So when I had that problem with structured PvP and had a little bit of falling out with it, I moved on to just doing PvE for that third and final day, and the second night, I think it was. So... And what I've jumped in with my human, level 22 human, no, level 16 at the time, and I finally experienced the starter human area. I did a couple of things, a couple of memorable moments, and we'll move on to our favorite moments for the weekend to round out the show. But a couple of memorable moments was, again, you can help out guildies, you can go back to earlier areas, but the problem was I was level 20-something, and I was helping out a dude who just started the human storyline. So all this stuff was happening in Divinity's Reach, and everyone's been paying attention to the hot podcast. I've stated before that I'm actually actively avoiding Divinity's Reach, and I don't want to see any of it till release. So what I had to do was I jumped in with the same party as him, and we went to Divinity's Reach. So what I did was I took the camera, I made it top down, so entirely top down, right? And then zoomed out to the case where I could pretty much just see the floor and a little bit around me, but not any of the buildings. And I played it like that for about an hour and a half. So I can say that Divinity's Reach has amazing floors. And I can say that the human starting experience is pretty cool in Divinity's Reach from what I saw of his cutscenes, what I allowed myself to see from his cutscenes. But aside from that, I still haven't seen any of Divinity's Reach, which is a high five of all, which is really hilarious. Everyone should try it out. You should try playing Guild Wars 2 as a top-down RPG. It's a bit of an interesting different
experience. Like Diablo?
It wasn't even like Diablo, because this was like truly top-down. All I could see is the top of my head and the floor around me and enemies like in the edges of my screen because I didn't zoom out too much because I didn't want to see too much. It was fun. Try it out. It was interesting and different. But aside from that, I pretty much just did Kessex Hills, which was... So has anybody else here done been in Kessex Hills as the human 15-25?
I've done a little bit of it, yeah.
No, I completely got the 100%.
Well, I say a little bit. I've done most of it.
Whoa, Noob 100%ed it. So there's a couple of things that I'd love to talk about to Kassex Hills before moving on to the next topic, which is our favorite moments for the weekend. One was the jumping puzzle, which we've already talked about. The second was the diving thing. So there's a point in Kassex Hills which overlooks like this lakeside town, I think it was. And there's, if you walk all the way around it, on the top there's a ledge there past some ettins, and at the very tip of the ledge, there's two like diver goggles on the ground. And we've seen this before. It was in, I think there's one in Lion's Arch as well. But it's the first time I did it. Did anyone else try diving in Guild Wars 2?
I did it in LA because there's what the hell they're called? A point of interest. It's actually like the diving.
Oh, cool.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty
random and different and fun. Like, you can't take the diving goggles and go a different direction. They automatically unequipped. But if you grab them, what you do is it replaces your weapon set and it replaces it with a couple of skills. I think there's like a turn and there's flip and I don't know the names for them, but they make your character do weird like in-air tricks, and you jump off the edge and then you have to quickly like try to time them right so you make a good landing, or if you do it poorly you belly flop at the end. And I think if you do it right and you land it properly, stick the landing, you get an achievement for it. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. Really? That didn't happen in L.A. At least I didn't. I know there's like a quote-unquote diving platform. Maybe I just didn't talk to the NPC.
Right, yeah. No, I'm pretty sure one of us got an achievement. Maybe it might have been like doing a certain amount of tricks in the air, but there is some form of achievement attached to it, and I totally recommend people try it out. It's pretty fun. So Noobarama, you 100% in Kassex Hills.
Yep.
So I guess we could both talk about probably my favorite dynamic event of the thing, which was about halfway through Kassex Hills, you see like this red glowing lava area, right?
Oh, like, so the destroyer.
Oh, yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, so it's... Oh, wait. Anyway, so I was walking towards that area, right? And there's a gigantic wall there. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. So I woke up and I see... The thing that made me shit myself the most, not out of happiness, like it was a happy shit. It was a, I was so overjoyed to see them.
Shit came out with a smile on it.
Yeah, exactly. It came out in the form of a smile in my pants. it was a
Pixar didn't happen.
A Tengu.
I'm disgusted.
And I love the Tengu.
Tengu, not the destroyer, it's just the Tengu. That's all that mattered to you.
The single Tengu who was standing above this giant pit of lava. I was there. I was like, yes, Tengu.
Oh, he was the karma vendor.
Yeah,
wasn't
he was.
He, for that,
it was
area?
Freaking awesome.
Okay, I saw
he was
that
the first
part.
Tengu I've ever seen in Guild Wars 2. And I walked up to him and I talked to him and I was like just tripping balls the entire time and just like totally enjoying it, because after I saw him, I looked behind him and looked closer at that wall. What turns out is, if you talk to him a bit, the entire Tengu area of the Kryta region of Guild Wars 2, which is kind of near the human starting area, has been walled off by the Tengu because they actually think that humanity is a pretty shitty race to live with, which is fair because we kind of did kind of.
Because in the original Guild Wars, I literally spent hours killing Tengu for their.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can see why they don't like humans.
Yeah, and it's not like they came to us and attacked us. We adventurers would run into the Tengu area and just like destroy Tengu. Anyway.
Yeah, you got to make those concepts. You got to make a living. There's Tengu. They're valuable.
So there's this gigantic wall there walling off the Tengu city. And again, I really hope that they let us play Tengu for one of the expansions, because it's all there. It's in the world. I know the city's there behind that fucking wall. Because everyone would play Tengu, right? I'd play Tengu. Tengu would be like my main.
Men, they're gross.
Oh yeah, so if you don't know what Tengu,
Tengu for feather farming.
They're Tengu in like the D&D sense. So I think it's a Chinese mythology, or was it?
No, Japanese.
Japanese mythology. So they're bird people. They have like opposable fingers in their wings. They can't fly. Like it's part of their wings, the opposable fingers, and they have like normal feet, but they wear human-ish clothes. They have beaks, so that. It's weird because I found this is a problem with a lot of the races in Guild Wars 2. You talk to, like, for example, the giants in the Norn starter area, or the Tengu in this case, or like even Ettins sometimes, and they sound really human. Like, have you guys noticed that?
Yeah, that kind of bothered
me. Yeah. Like, Tengus have beaks, guys.
Well, even in the original Guild Wars, it was assumed that Tengu were, like, people. They spoke everything. And
well, they had a very distinct voice to them in the original Guild Wars. They had, like, the screechy kind of... Yeah, they did.
That was, like, the shrill Tengu yell. That's not them talking.
No, yeah. When you're talking to Silverwing, he has a screechy voice. It's a very, like, raspy kind of voice.
Yeah, but that's... It's not very different from a person.
Oh, he's still speaking English, but right. He has, like, all the Tengu you speak to in the original Guild Wars at least have, like, some kind of tonality to them. Different.
All of the characters had some tonality. Had my game audio in Korean. Sound human.
Was that a dig at Guild Wars 1 voice acting?
Yeah. Something wrong with those voice actors. Maybe they all have throat cancer or something.
In this case...
By Balthazar's beard, Rin burned. God damn it.
Oh, hold on. While we're on the topic of voice acting... Favorite thing in all of Guild Wars 2, in L.A., in, like, the Market District, by, like, the Trading Post and the Mystic Forge. We haven't talked about that yet.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, there's one guy who just always yells out, "By Ogden's Hammer, what savings?" It's, like, my favorite thing in the whole universe. Because it's such a bad, cheesy line, and it's delivered in the most perfect way.
That's fantastic. Do you think it was intentionally bad good, or do you think it was just bad?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool.
Definitely.
By the way, what's his face? Bracket bartender name in closed bracket guy still exists in Black Citadel. And I really hate the fact they took out sit jumping and sleep jumping. I thought they'd leave that into the end of the betas.
Rest in peace, sit jumping.
I know.
Cool, man. No, knockdown running
don't
still in.
It constantly, man. I bet.
Yeah, knockdown running. But catch out the last beat of the live stream to see that. But just to back to my...
I got stuck in, like, the standard 3D model. Thing with, like, your legs locked together and your arms at, like, a 45-degree angle down.
Yeah.
I got stuck in that and was just, like, levitating around the world. It was kind of weird.
But to get back to my story, so you meet this Tengu.
Like a Mursaat.
And you look behind him. Oh, the Mursaat were fantastic character design in the first game. I love them. They're probably my favorite enemies.
I felt like a Mursaat.
You sorry?
Anyway.
You hated the Mursaat.
No, say, look, when I was in that pose, I felt like a Mursaat.
Mursaat was so cool. Anyway, so you look behind this Tengu and this gigantic wall, right? And you look close to the wall, and it's got all this beautiful, like, engravings in it, which are, like, if you look closer still, there's, like, a face of a Tengu, like, artfully sculpted out in this gigantic wall. And, like, all this, like, you get the idea of the entire Tengu race. I may be just a Tengu fanboy, but anyway, you get an idea of the Tengu race, but just seeing this wonderfully sculpted wall. And just below them is this huge, like, pit of lava, because what's happening is... And spoilers, so in case, and Noob ruined it before, but if you don't want to know about Guild Wars 1 storyline, if you don't want to know too much about this area of Guild Wars 2, then maybe tune out for probably next minute. So, all right, spoiler warning ends there. There's a huge pit of lava, and what's happening is the destroyers are back. So there's, like, fonts.
The destroyers were always there. It's not like they disappeared.
Yeah, well, we kind of beat them down,
right?
But there
did we?
Apparently
not. We
didn't
really
clearly
beat
not.
Them down.
And it was a great experience because it was like there's two moments in this where I found the Guild Wars 2 interpretation of how things looked in Guild Wars 1 is like a beautiful contrast. So the destroyer models have all been updated. There's new destroyer types. They came out of the ground. You attack them, and you have enemies from around the world in Guild Wars 2. So in the countryside, for example, there was, like, a destroyer devourer, which looked really badass and really interesting looking. Like, they twisted the look of all the, like, nearby fauna and flora. So all the, like, destroyer area was awesome, and everything was, like, covered in this, like, layer of, like, sulfuric, I assume, even though your character doesn't die by entering it, but like an ash mist. So you enter this, like, misty area with, like, red highlights because of this glowing lava and all this stuff. It was a beautiful area. And then as a backdrop to the whole thing, you have that gigantic, awesome Tengu wall to their city. It was, like, the coolest part of Kessex Hills, in my opinion, was just that, like, little spot. Yeah, and you enter the cave, you kill some destroyers, and awesome shit happens.
Destroyer.
Yeah, that was a really gay part.
Yeah, there's a few dynamic events.
Yeah, and the other one was there's, like, a swamp area towards the south just before Kessex Hills.
Yeah.
And, and which is pretty cool because it's actually the Temple of Ages from the original Guild Wars. So if you dive underwater, you can see, like, the what's left of the statue of Duena and the statue
and, like,
of...
they tied that in.
I saw that. That was pretty awesome.
Because it's the Temple of Ages, there's still, like, a connection to the underworld, and all of these addexes and stuff are spawning in.
Exactly, and you can really see cool. the new, like, interpretation of how the bladed Attax looks, and it's really cool.
Yeah, so cool. Yeah.
I think it looks less cool than the original.
The Attaxes are like ghosts. It's weird.
Yeah, there's ghosts,
like,
as well.
Black shade around them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not just, like, big hulking.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. But they're purple now. I liked them before when they were just, like, this black, dark, like, moving...
Yeah, as long as they still drop echoes.
Yeah, they don't drop echoes.
They don't drop echoes. We killed quite a few. Aww. They didn't drop anything special. But that was cool. Like
It doesn't mean the drop rate's high.
That doesn't mean the drop rate is. Fuck off. They could. They could.
Yeah, those things in Maguma Jungle, they drop echoes.
Really?
No.
In the first killers, yeah.
Nothing in
there's like,
Maguma Jungle drops echoes.
Yeah, there's... Yeah, look it up. It's like a super, super, super low drop rate. It's like... 0.001%.
Nice.
If that.
Anyway, so those are two areas that I really enjoyed from the human starting area. Like, so the jumping section, the diving section, the area where Galrath used to be. So the Legend of quest line, I think it was called Legend of Galrath. And at the end of it, you kill Galrath. Spoilers. From the first Guild Wars from 7 years ago. But you like the castle that he had, or the castle that was behind the area, I'm not sure what the background of it is still floating there in Guild Wars 2 over this like large like lake. And there's a lakeside town there, and there's people there who like are living in the shadow of this huge, like ominous, dark looking castle, but you still can't go to the castle, at least not yet. Do you think we actually ever end up being able to go there, Noob?
Where?
The castle, the Galrath castle, which is floating above Kessex Hills.
Yeah. Like, I tried to swim, but there was an invisible wall.
I imagine so.
Yeah, there's an invisible wall if you try to swim there. It's just, I just really want to go up there. It reminds me of Ida's castle from Final Fantasy VIII, because it's chained to the ground.
Shut the fuck up.
Final Fantasy VIII is a decent game.
Come on.
I'm sorry. No. No, it's tactics. I'm sorry,
but yeah, like it's this huge, like floating castle, floating. There's a giant piece of like rock, and it's chained to the ground. It's been chained there for hundreds of years, apparently, because it's still there. And I really hope we get to go there in Guild Wars 2. So there's a couple of like notes there for the future that I was really excited about.
Area in the original Guild Wars is so fucked up. It's full of like hundreds of mesmers up on a hill cliff, and then you can't attack them while you're trying to walk through. I remember
so
crying
good.
When I was trying to vanquish that area.
I loved that entire questline and area in Guild Wars 1. Again, so like shadows of that in Guild Wars 2 is stuff I really enjoyed from the Huning Study area. Does anyone else have anything else from Kessex Hills that they enjoyed, or the Human Starting area that maybe I could chime in on? No? All right.
No. Oh, okay. I mean, it was fun. I mean, there's nothing really in
God,
there's no
did you guys
one
see
thing
the spaceship?
That stands out to me.
No.
What?
Oh, there was like this thing near the end of the beta. There was like this giant spaceship.
Oh, we didn't talk about the beta ending.
There
was
this giant spaceship, and it came down. And
I wasn't
like,
there for
one
it.
Of the... Oh, no, I'm just kidding. No,
was I the only person who was there for the end of the beta?
No,
I was there.
I went there.
Yeah. I wasn't.
It was interesting.
It was cool. We might.
It was better than the first one. I'll say.
We might talk about it next week.
I had work.
Can we talk about it next
week?
Yeah,
we'll talk about it next week.
We gotta.
I want to get at least one more person who was there. Probably Tarkin. I'll probably get him on. So yeah, aside from that,
Tarkin could
awesome.
Talk about how fun that Ascalon Catacombs adventure was.
Indeed. Kessex Hills was awesome. Char starting area was awesome with that giant stuff. Everything else, I have to say that. Most of my time, even though I spent it in WVW, and I probably still think WVW is the reason I get Guild Wars 2. In fact, I'd probably buy Guild Wars 2 if I hadn't already just for WVW. Because I literally spent like 20 plus hours there, and I just wanted more. But PvE is really good in Guild Wars 2, guys.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. They fixed melee. I was so happy. At least
Did you feel much of a difference? I didn't feel too much of a difference.
Yeah, like I went all... dual pistols in the first beta, and I pretty much played all dual daggers in this beta.
Oh, wow.
I thought it was much better.
Cool. And this was your thief, right?
Yeah. I actually thought, I don't know, I sort of had a nice little build going where I had the venom that applies poison,
right.
And the dual dagger skill, the number 3 slot, is like Leaping Death Blossom, so it's like an AoE that also applies 3 stacks of bleeding.
Wow.
So I could just throw on that venom, aggro 2 or 3 things, use that... skill twice, So I'll have poison on three enemies plus six stacks of bleeding enemies.
Cool.
So by the time one of those things is dead, the other two are like half health.
Nice.
So.
But yeah, it's, again, it's amazing how good the everyday, like, give us to, the PvE works for two main reasons, in my opinion. One, the dynamic event system I think is really cool. Sorry, three reasons. There's probably many more, but whatever. The dynamic event system is really cool. Second one, the art style and just the world itself and the world building is fucking amazing. Like, just again, like, that one area, I can't believe I probably remember it for my entire Guild Wars 2 life. That area with the Tengu and all that stuff. The diving place, I still remember the chained castle of Galrath now and seeing again in Guild Wars 2. Like, just the art style really kicks ass. But the third one is, combat in Guild Wars 2, even against AI enemies, like just general PvP, PvE areas, is really engaging. Like, I really love normal.
Yeah, it's actually pretty active.
Yeah. Like, I'm not sure how much you did. Did you do it solo, or did you tend to play PvE as a group?
I did it mostly solo. Like, I mean, not solo as in actively avoided other people, just like I wasn't really grouped up a lot of the time.
So did you feel, I felt this way, did you feel that you can essentially...
I feel like with PvE, like, there's really not much of a need to group up unless there's somebody that you are playing with maybe from the guild or a real life friend or something
that
you
want
to run
up
together. There's no real need at all to group up with anybody.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, like, I did events with other people, but it wasn't...
Exactly.
We were just sort of all doing this event.
Well, areas, especially like dungeon areas, like those mini crypts I was talking about, if you're not grouped up and like coordinating together, you're going to end up dying because there's a lot of different puzzles.
Yeah, but it's not you're grouping up not to like so you can like share rewards. You're grouping up just because group chat is easier.
Yeah.
It's not really like you don't have to. You can just use local chat.
Yeah, there's no need to go. But like, I'm looking for a group for this dynamic event. Like, there's literally none of that. There's no reason. Again, like I said, unless you're running with somebody that you know, or you're like, you know, real life friend or a guild member or something, and you're just wanting to keep track of each other easier on the mini map, there's no real other need to actually be in a group.
Yeah, The what I was trying to get at was I felt that I could approach pretty much any situation in Guild Wars 2 alone, except for some very specific dynamic events, because it rewards playing well and the combat system really is on the die. Like, you can essentially take on three veterans at once as pretty much any class alone if you play it right.
Three veterans? I don't know about that.
I could take three veterans as a warrior. I know a guardian that I've played with can take three veterans. Depending on what race, I think giants.
I'll say it's a bit squishy.
Yeah, it depends on how hard they hit. But in general, like, you can take on really ridiculous circumstances alone by playing well and just like working to the combat system's strengths. I just felt like Guild Wars 2 is really rewarding both. Playing alone, playing with skill, and also doing things how you want to do them. In that, if you want to play alone and solo everything, and use that ability to play with skill to advance, you can do so. And again, you can visit higher level areas than you usually would because of the good combat system, because it allows you to do that. What are you guys' thoughts?
So I spend most of my time in like higher leveled areas, and I usually was playing alone. But there are definitely certain areas that you cannot play alone. Like,
definitely.
It is not a game for you to play alone the entire game. You're going to need help at some point in the game.
Really? Okay, that's actually surprising to me.
Yeah, the mini dungeon that I did in the Char area, I tried to do it by myself, and I had trouble.
Wow, okay. Like, so,
it was made for groups.
And secondly, that leads to my thing is, I'm hoping, the problem is a lot of people are really spread out, and sometimes you don't come across people in areas that you might need help with. So I just wonder how, like, you know, it's not instance, but the server seems pretty empty for a full server. I mean, even in the beta, like, people were really spread out. I mean, I was just walking around, and a lot of the times I was walking alone, I didn't come across other people.
There was different hotspots. I found there was hotspots.
Yeah.
It seemed like areas between dynamic events, I would agree with that, but anywhere where you were at, a dynamic event area, there was always people around that I saw.
Depends. Hard quests, yes, but for actual normal...
Well, I think the problem with that is that the level at which you were playing was probably quite a bit higher than the average level of most of
the games. Like level 28.
Yeah, I agree.
That's higher than the average.
Yeah, I got the 28, and there wasn't a whole lot of people around.
Like, if you like
playing in the lower 20s areas, there were tons of people.
Yeah,
it's just I think that a lot of people are kind of being piecemealing. Yeah. They're grabbing like little bits of everything about the game, and they just want to see like, okay, you know, maybe this weekend I'm going to focus on PvP, or maybe today I'm going to focus on PvE, or I'm going to focus on the Norn starting here. I'm going to focus on the Char starting here.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not getting a lot of people who are focusing on a single character and playing it as if the game was launched.
Yeah.
And so as you get higher into the content, you're getting further and further ahead of the curve. Yeah,
that was the question I was going to ask. Like, what level did you find that really kicked in? But if it was around 28, then that makes sense. But did you find that things got harder as you leveled up and got to higher level areas and you started having to have more people with you? Or did you...
No.
Like the comment you made was...
Not really.
You felt that eventually you did need people with you, but that only makes sense because
the area didn't have to do with the level;
it had to do with the area.
The mini dungeon was the one exception that I had. Everything else, I could do it on my own.
Anything with champions, but of course, I can handle well.
But of course, I mean, as long as I'm doing an event, eventually people would come along, and then I'd play with them.
Right. Yeah. Cool. So it wasn't a case where, in general, you said that you eventually wanted to you needed other people there. That was for very specific events, but most of the time you could just solo, like just to round things out. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. And does anyone else have anything to add? I think we'll do this, the one last topic before ending it for the day. We'll talk about more about WBW. We'll respond to anyone who has any thoughts. When it comes to my PvP statement, because I think already in the forums there's a couple of people who have thoughts about that. There's also people who want to know more about soloing in Guild Wars 2, so we'll touch upon that topic probably next week if it remains a topic to be talked about.
We just talked about it a bit,
but we could probably go a little bit more into it. In case, we'll see. Whatever. Next week, I'll see if I even remember anything from this week next week. But anyway, just to round out the show, I'm just going to round the table here and do favorite moment from this beta weekend. I'll start with probably Durin. What was your favorite thing you did this weekend?
Favorite moment.
I don't know if Durin's here.
Durin's not here? Oh, okay. I missed that. Shinboy?
Oh, hold on. Think about this for a minute.
Formulate my thoughts.
Favorite moment.
All right. I'll go through mine.
I think... I'll give you mine. Was probably realizing that Melee is viable. At least at the point where I was at.
Where was that? What were you doing at the time?
Well, it was funny. I actually... I mentioned a few weeks ago that I did a video about the trading post, and in that video, I stupidly bought a really good dagger for way more than I should have bought it for. Right. So when I started playing this weekend, I was like, well, shit, I paid all this money for this dagger. I might as well use it. And when I started using it, I found that dagger was actually really damn fun.
Cool. That's pretty cool.
And that was for the warrior?
That was for the
thief.
Yeah, I don't think warrior can use daggers.
Thief, okay. Yeah, my friend played a thief, and apparently he really liked it.
Nice.
So
Rawson, what was your favorite moment from this weekend?
Easily doing the World v. World as part of the big group.
Nice. Well, I'm happy that you enjoyed that. You didn't play with us too much over the next day.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I went back and played with someone who I usually play games with.
Right, yeah. You should invite them over, because we'd be obviously wouldn't mind more people in the guild. But yeah, so anyway, so aside from War vs. World, because I think we can touch more on that next week, what would you say was your best?
I mean, that was the big one.
Really? There wasn't anything else that really caught your fancy?
That's sort of the highlight of that weekend in my brain. Yeah, I'll definitely touch on that a bit more next week.
Yes.
Beyond that, like, just being able to play the actual game just the way I play it.
Nice.
The way I play MMOs, and I feel like I'm not being restricted.
Right.
And being able, and when my friend went on with, like, a level 3 character, being able to jump back with him, and even though I'm, like, almost level 20 at this point... Being able to play with him and get gear for myself, that was great.
Yeah.
Realizing that, you know, that is how it works, and it's a system that totally does work.
Yeah, and it totally reinforces people playing together, people having fun together, helping out people.
It's
it's the craziest thing. It's a massively multiplayer game where you play with other people.
I know. What the hell? Who'd have thought? Noobarama.
God damn.
What was your favorite moment from this weekend?
It was Ascalon Catacomb. I really had fun with that. No, fuck you, ArenaNet. Fuck you. No, it was looking at Durin's character's sexy panties in the stream.
That's kind of sad.
Oh god, there were so many sexy panties.
It was cooking. For some reason, I really enjoyed the cooking.
Oh, that's
I
cool.
Can actually say
that was hey, these favorite. Are some interesting picks for favorite moments. Oh yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's like a time sink. I was just sitting there pressing buttons, trying to figure out what cooking recipes I can do, and then walking around collecting herbs, and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? This is not a cooking simulator.
But it is now.
Cooking Mama. So Guild Wars 2, I'm dropping everything else except cooking. So yeah, you can hit me up on my new restaurant that I'm opening up.
Oh, I wish you could. That'd be cool. That's nice. Can you sell cooking stuff on... I'm sorry, fully made stuff on the training post?
Yep. They are going for really low prices. Like $5.
Oh. Now
merge them
just have
for
to...
higher than I can for trading them in the...
Right.
Yeah, I ran into the same problem with jeweling. Like, since everyone was probably just trying it out, a lot of the basic stuff, the market was just saturated.
Right. Gotcha.
So,
Durin, what was your favorite moment from the weekend? Not World vs. World. We'll talk about next week.
But what if it was kind of in World vs. World?
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm pretty sure
See,
I know the one
that's my same
pull,
problem.
But it's a story I want to tell next week. You told me the trebuchet
one,
right?
No, it was the dungeon.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Yeah, sure.
Like...
Okay, that story's already told.
Yeah, I don't have to tell the story. But like, as punishing as
through that,
so you seriously think that was your favorite moment? That's crazy.
Yeah, because as punishing as the dungeon was, and as much as I hated myself the entire time I was playing it, it's kind of the same reason why we play games like Super Meat Boy and
you're a masochist,
Dark Souls and things. It's not maybe a little bit, but like it's more so as somebody who's played MMOs, since at least since Vanilla WoW. Like I've been playing these games a lot. Through a lot of WoW, I was, a pretty heavy raider. I was never in one of those super serious guilds, never doing things like, world firsts or things like that.
Right.
But so to have something where I was able to accomplish something and to have done so, what seems like, one of the first people on the server to do it, like that was just a really, really awesome
nice.
Feeling.
Cool. But
and again,
I'm not gonna lie,
I will never fucking
really
do it.
Yeah, my follow-up question is: would you recommend anyone else to do it? Though I wouldn't.
If they do, I would recommend doing it immediately. If you're doing it in a beta weekend event, do it as soon as it goes live. Like that's the first thing you do is just go straight into there and hope to God that your side is the one controlling World v World.
Yeah.
At launch, again, do it when it first launches. If you don't. Then I would not recommend doing it.
Yeah, I'd say probably
unless thing. You're running it, unless you're running in with like your full guild and your intention is to get to the very end of it. I could see that being kind of fun, maybe.
Yeah.
If you have a guild full of masochists, but
our guild
trying to go in there by yourself and go do that absolutely.
Oh
not.
Yeah, like, in general, do that with other people, like people you know.
Yeah, we got extremely lucky being able to do that, and I went back afterwards and I was so mad because. We decided to stop the stream right before we continued past that first room. So none of it
right.
got recorded.
Ouch. Okay, gotcha. Well, we needed that because the darkness room just wouldn't have worked on the stream.
True. Yeah, to some extent. I mean, your UI is still on there. So
it's true. Yeah.
Things would be on the screen. But,
but yeah, no. Anyway, so I would agree. Like, surprisingly enough, the curveball answer of my own, if I'm not going to go into World vs. World, I'd say my favorite moments was, yes, that Tengu wall, but my second favorite is first entering the darkness area of the WVW dungeon and seeing everything just go black and knowing that I'm still playing Guild Wars 2, but suddenly feeling like some weird, 1995 hardcore PC game. Wish it just got real on me.
Like Die by the Sword or something.
Exactly. Yeah, just feeling that moment.
I can't believe Treyarch made that game.
That's my second favorite non-WW moment, even though it was in WW, but I won't count. So those are our picks. Has anyone not done it? I think that's everyone. So we'll end the show there. Thanks for listening. It's been a long show. It's been about 3 hours or so, 3 hours 15.
Can I plug my restaurant?
So, Yeah, we'll start doing plugs. You can catch us on thelincolncast@gmail.com if you want to give us any feedback, or obviously the two posts. So I make them in the Giant Bomb Guild Wars 2 forums and Guild Wars 2 Guru under explicit The Lincoln Cast in the community section. You can also follow us on Twitter at The Lincoln Cast. I am Sokovist Cynic signing out. Durin, do you have any plugs?
I'll just go ahead and keep plugging my Twitch channel because
yeah.
It seems like people are enjoying watching it now. I'm actually getting more... more of an audience lately.
Oh, cool.
So I'm going to continue the Grimrock stuff. And basically what my theme of it is and this was initially going to be the theme until somebody bought me Grimrock, is I'm basically wanting to play through a lot of these games that I have bought on Steam and never played.
All right.
So I'm just using Steam Roulette to decide what my next game is going to be. So once Grimrock is done, we're going to spin it again and see what the next game is.
Nice.
And that's
Steam Roulette?
Like was mentioned earlier, it's twitch.tv/Durin.
Cool.
Wait, is Steam Roulette like a thing, or is that just what you're calling it?
No, it's a website.
Is that an actual thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's
you basically
cool.
Put your Steam ID in, and it pulls up a whole list of games, and you can go through and remove some if you want to remove them, because you know maybe you beat them already.
Yeah, they're just not installed. Or...
Yeah, you press a button, and then it'll actually scroll through them and randomly pick one out.
Oh.
Okay, that's cool.
It just told me to play Fallout New Vegas. That's a good suggestion.
Mine was actually going to be Fallout 3 before a friend gifted me Grimrock because he wanted me to play through that instead.
Yeah, it's so. Such a good game. But I'll do Shinboy next because I know he has something to plug on like the other two. Shinboy!
Yeah. My site, plugandplaygaming.com. I mentioned before a video I did on the Training Post. We just put all our E3 thoughts.
Oh, cool.
In summary, Microsoft sucks.
So. In summary, for me, both Nintendo and Microsoft sucked. That's my.
Well, see, I didn't watch the Nintendo one. So,
in summary, for me, all of it just fucking terrible.
Ubisoft was good. Ubisoft was good. Anyway,
Ubisoft was
good games.
But... Ubisoft was king of shit mountain.
Watch Dogs
looked awesome. Okay, yeah, I guess that's the ending statement. Star Wars 1313 and Watch Dogs looked awesome. Everything else was relatively disappointing.
They were both running.
No. We had Assassin's Creed 3.
Oh, yeah, that looked amazing. Anyway, let's not get to E3 too much.
Yeah, let's not get into that.
So plugandplaygaming.com, isn't it?
Yep, and Steam Roulette is telling me to play Dungeon Defenders, so if anyone wants, hit me up and play Dungeon Defenders. Just search my Steam ID, which is Shinboy.
All right, let's get to the losers of the team. Rawson, do you have anything to plug?
Not this week, but coming up soon. I got something in the pipe.
Ooh, fancy.
Sounds like you're constipated.
I do kind of have to go poop, but that's...
That's neither here nor there. Nubarama, you need the plug?
No. I'd like to plug my restaurant I'm opening up in Dibonese Ridge. It's called La Cuisine. It's a high-class restaurant. And I'm accepting, reservations at $1 per seat.
Yeah.
What you should set up the restaurant in Ultima Online, but you serve the food in Guild Wars 2. That way you have a virtual presence. Right. Also, you should set up another restaurant in Second Life.
Yeah, I was going to say, Second Life.
That way I can go in while dressed up as my badger persona.
Oh, God. And
no restaurant ship.
That is it for the week. Thanks for joining us. That was the Lincoln Cast. I forgot what episode. I think this is episode 8. So that's all. Catch us next week for more beta impressions and news if there is any. We'll definitely get touch on WVW then. But until then, goodbye.
Good night.
Bye.